Now, with people protesting against the problems facing the Iranian economy, drought, inflation and unemployment, do these protests have any prospect of changing things for ordinary Iranians, and should they be supported by Western democracies, or should we stay well out of it? At 11, as New Year celebrations commence down under, what is the meaning of New Year and has it changed over the years? Why is it so much more meaningful in Scotland? At 12, I'll be joined by Nick Abbott, Simon Marks and Sheila Fogarty live, and they'll be giving me their predictions for 2026. And of course, I want yours too, as well as your New Year's resolutions.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, delays and cancellations are continuing on the Eurostar this morning after a major power outage. Thousands of passengers have been affected as they try to get away for New Year celebrations. Michelle was due to catch a train to Brussels for New Year's Eve, but told LBC she's still stuck at London St Pancras.
I had preparations today, but yeah, I cancelled those, so I hope I'll make it home in time for New Year's Eve. Yeah. But we'll see. Delayed is fine. As long as I can get home, it's already okay, but if it's not happening today, then I'll be a bit stressed out. But yeah, it is what it is.
Eurostar officials say they will try to run services as usual today. There'll be an increased police presence on the streets of Sydney this evening after the Bondi Beach terror attack. 15 people were killed when two gunmen opened fire at a Hanukkah event there earlier this month. Police Commissioner for New South Wales, Mal Lanyon, says there's a complex operation in place.
We will have over 2,500 police officers in the central metropolitan area alone. That will comprise officers on the land and on the water, and we'll also have our aviation support up in the air to provide support. I want the community not only to be safe, but feel safe.
Iran's government says it will listen patiently to protesters as demonstrations spread outside of the capital. People are protesting over the country's plummeting currency and inflationary pressures, which have pushed up the price of food and essentials. The Queen has praised racing commentator John Hunt and his daughter Amy for their courage after their family were murdered in their home. Louise, Hannah and Carol Hunt were killed by Kyle Clifford in Bushy in July last year. Thieves have used a drill to steal millions of euros worth of cash and valuables from a bank in Germany. They broke open more than 3,000 safe deposit boxes filled with money, gold and jewellery. Police likened the break-in to the Hollywood heist film Ocean's 11, saying it was very professionally executed. And new figures show the British music industry has grown for the 11th year in a row. The British phonographic industry says it's down to new artists like Olivia Dean and Lola Young. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past 10 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until one. Now, we're going to spend a lot of the programme talking about New Year, what it means, resolutions, predictions, but that's coming up a bit later. In this hour, I want to talk about Iran because over the last 15 years since I've been presenting on LBC, there have been various spates of protests in Iran against the regime. The last one, I think, was in 2022. And it was predominantly women who inspired the protests. In the end, I was going to say they fizzled out. I think it's more that they were extinguished by the regime. And that happens an awful lot. And if you go back to the early part of the century, there were protests where people thought that Western democracies would come in and support the protests, and which would lead to the toppling of the Iranian regime. The American regime at the time decided to not do that. Many would say quite rightly, they probably interfered in too many regimes over the years. But I wonder what you make of this set of protests, because demonstrations began on Sunday all over the country because there is a real economic crisis in Iran at the moment. The Iranian rial, their currency, has plunged to a record low against the dollar. The head of the country's central bank has resigned because of that. And the protests against the economic circumstances, they seem to have morphed into something wider, where people are chanting death to Khomeini. He's the supreme leader in Iran. And they're protesting against draconian restrictions on women, with students and shopkeepers demonstrating in what's called a rare alliance against the government. Well, yesterday, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, in plain clothes, trapped students who were chanting freedom and death to the dictator inside Tehran University and attacked them. It's not known how many were injured. Roads were blockaded, shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar were shut, and riot police clashed with protesters outside the British Embassy in scenes of mass disobedience. Now, the unrest has spread rapidly across Iran, on a scale not seen, as I say, since the 2022 protests that followed the death in police custody of Mahsa Jina Amini. She was a 22-year-old girl who'd been arrested for allegedly not wearing her hijab correctly. Now, the Telegraph are reporting, they're quoting Nafas, a student at Tehran University, saying, students have been chanting since last night. The security forces surrounded the campus and rode their motorcycles around it. They returned today with batons, stun guns and tear gas. Now, why are we covering this today? Because I think it is important that, I mean, this is quite a significant moment in Iran because, of course, earlier this year, Donald Trump launched an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. The Israelis have launched attacks on Iran. And since then, frankly, we've heard not really a peep from Iran. But Iran is this incredibly significant country in the Middle East. So when you have these kind of protests, you have to ask yourself, well, do you think that they are actually going to have any effect on the regime? Could they, in the end, lead to the toppling of the regime? Now, I'm not going to sit here and advocate that we in the West should intervene here and do anything that is, well, that is seen as provoking things. I think if the regime is to be toppled, it does need to be done from the inside. But I know from previous times when we've talked about Iran that there's a tremendous Iranian diaspora in the United Kingdom. So if you do originate from Iran, maybe you've fled the regime over the years, and you want to tell us what you're hearing is going on because you'll have friends and relatives back in Iran, give me a call, 0345 6060 973. And should the West just stay out and let whatever will be? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. And what's it like to live in a country where your freedoms are restricted, where you can't do what you want, you can't say what you want, you have to look over your shoulder all the time, you have security forces monitoring you maybe all the time, or at least you fear you do? What's it like to live in a country like that? Not necessarily just Iran. And how? What do you do about it? And in the end, is that why so many people flee to Western countries, just to escape that, because they're fed up with having their freedom restricted? Well, let's talk to Professor Majoub Zawahiri, who is an academic and expert on Middle East politics. Professor, very good morning. Can you give us, first of all, the background, the historical background to these protests, and tell us maybe, in your opinion, why previous sets of protests have amounted to very little?
This is the third demonstrations where Bazaar is fully involved. The first one, 2008, the second one, 2010. Both of them, they happened under Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and both of those demonstrations happened because of legislation change on taxes. The first one about VAT, 3%, and the other one about increasing the cost of living, renting houses, taxes on revenue, which requested at that time 70%. This is the third time where Bazaar feels the heat. Basically, the Bazaar is indicating that people have no enough money to buy any kind of I would say, need, and which basically requires a lot of concern to the bazaar. Let's not forget, bazaar is the main alliance of the Islamic Republic of Iran. There are three main sources of power for Islamic Republic of Iran. The first one, the Revolutionary Guard. The second one is the religious circle. And the third one is the bazaar. And as we see, the bazaar now is basically feeling upset. That is an important indicator about a fragility of the relationship between the three main components. This is, I think, alarming to the regime there, because the timing is bad. This coming after the war with the 12 days war with Israel in summer. It came also after the killing of the main leaders, a military leader of Iran, and which raised a question about the strength of the regime, and also after the attack on their nuclear facilities. So all of this happens in a matter of 6 months, will raise a lot of questions about the strength of the regime to be and the ability to control the current scene.
What are you hearing about the way that they are trying to repress these protests? And are they just happening in Tehran, or have they spread across the country?
Interestingly, in the mainstream media, there is very little, by the way. I was following the story in the last 48 hours. Very little is being said. The scale, it seems, not as as being expected. But again, the importance of it, because the involvement of the bazaar. We heard now about the university is becoming of it, and the university, I witnessed myself when I was doing my PhD there in 1999, a demonstration under Khatami where Revolutionary Guard basically attacking people, students at University of Tehran. That I was witness of that 1999. So that indicate that students also have another demands which beyond the economy and the economic situation. People, they talk about other elements, freedoms and social freedom and all of this. But let's not forget, by the way, in the last 2 years, I would say in the last year, the President Pezeshkian was trying to show some, I would say, less pressure on people when it comes to hijab, for example. But it seems the demand of the people, considering the economic situation, is increasing. And there are a lot of questions about the performance of the government of tackling the major issues, which is basically the economy, considering the inflation now is crossing, reaching to 50%, and the unemployment around 8%. So these are an alarming indicators.
I wonder whether, though, I mean, if the Iranian regime was ever brought to its knees, do you think that would happen through protest because of the economy, that people can't afford to eat what they want or they can't get jobs? Or do you think it is going to be more about protesting against the lack of freedoms and the repression that exists?
Look, as someone who worked in Iran for nearly 25 years, the people, they may not like the regime, but they don't want to change the regime using outside forces. They want to do it themselves on their way and according to their own timeline. For simple reason, they don't want to have another authoritarian regime. That is what I was myself gathering when it was there, also when following the whole matter of Iran. The people, if you remember, when Israel and Iran entered this war in June, there are more opposition of Iranian government who actually went to support the Iranian regime because of the war with Israel. So there is sort of feeling within the Iranian, a feeling of a pride of being Iranian does not allow them to say, okay, we will not allow foreigners to change. We will do it ourselves based on our timeline. If we have a crisis internally, we will do it, but they don't want involvement. And that itself, I think, will complicate any intervention from outsider, because let's not remember the current establishment used any support from outsider to undermine any internal critique or demonstration. So the people now they are more vigilant that they will not accept support from outside, so their movement will not be undermined or tackled in a very bloody manner.
Have I misremembered, though, in 2008, wasn't there a feeling among the people who were protesting at the time, they felt completely let down by the fact that they thought they had been promised help from America and outside, and it didn't materialise, and they felt let down by that. Now, what you seem to be saying now is that is not the situation here. They'd actually prefer America or indeed any other Western country to just stay out.
Exactly. They don't trust them. They feel that they have intervened in a very bad manner in Iraq, in Afghanistan. They have not helped the people there to be free or to change their situation. The situation there becomes worse. In other ways, they don't want to see destruction. They don't want to see the cities are destroyed. They don't want to see a failed state. They want, I would say, more quiet change, maintaining the institutions, the identity of the country, the cultural identity of the country, maintaining, I would say, the pride of being Iranian.
Thank you very much indeed for informing us with such interesting views. Thank you very much, Professor. That's Professor Majib Sawari there, an academic and expert on Middle Eastern politics. I want to come to your calls and messages in just a moment. One of the motivations for doing this hour is that I think things like this are often overlooked. And yes, there are articles in all of today's papers. But I think sometimes these kinds of stories about protests in repressive regimes and dictatorships, not just in the Middle East, but all over the world, are sometimes ignored in this country, and they shouldn't be. And I know last time we talked about the protests in 2022, I think there were so many people that rang in who were originally from Iran, but live in this country now, who were incredibly grateful to us for highlighting what was going on. So that's kind of my motivation for doing this hour. Unfortunately, Zach won't accept that. He says, give us a break, Ian. You guys couldn't care less about the Iranians, just like the entire Muslim world. Well, how wrong could you be, Zach, as I hope will be demonstrated over the next hour. If I didn't care about Iran, I wouldn't be bothering to do it in this hour, I can assure you. It's 16 minutes past 10.
This is LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
19 minutes past 10 on LBC. I can't imagine what it must be like to live in a under a repressive regime. One of the best books I read last year, or was it the year before, was by Nadeem Zahawi, the former Conservative cabinet minister, who grew up in Saddam Hussein's Iraq until he was 10 years old, and then he and his family fled to this country. And honestly, it's such an eye-opener as to the effect that living in a regime like that has on children, let alone adults. So what I'd also like to do this hour is talk more generally about what it's like to live under a repressive regime, particularly one where you aren't allowed to dress how you want if you are a woman. I mean, there are plenty of countries in the world where that happens, not just Iran, where there are police that go around sort of basically arresting you if you don't appear in what they would term the right way. Maybe you are somebody who lived in East Germany under the Stasi, which I think that was probably the most repressive regime in modern day Europe, where neighbours would tell on each other, family members would tell on each other. You could never trust anyone. And I think anybody who lives in a normal Western democracy looks at those sorts of things and thinks, well, that is just a different world. So what's it like to live under a dictatorial regime with a secret police where you just feel that you have very, very few freedoms? Or do you just get on with your life and you ignore all the politics, you ignore all the repression, and you just get on with your life and have done with it? And what is it that sparks the sorts of protests that are going on in Iran at the moment? I think economic circumstances are often to blame, but it is often the repression as well. So if you can shed any light on what's going on in Iran at the moment, particularly if you live in the UK and you have friends, family members who are still in Iran, what are they telling you about what is going on? Do they support it? Maybe they feel they can't even talk about it if they're talking to you on the phone because their phones might be monitored. Mohammed says, as an Iranian expat, I beg you guys to highlight this issue every day. It has to be on every front page. The Iranian currency has collapsed, and with UN sanctions, the government is unable to bring any change. People are calling for the return of Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi. Western governments have to put pressure on the regime to help the public and identify the stolen money which is hidden in Western banks. If Iran is freed, the European immigration problem will subside. Yemen, Lebanon, Gaza will breathe a sigh of relief. Well, there's a lot of issues that are raised there because Mohammed is actually urging Western governments to put pressure on the regime. Well, they are doing so to an extent by sanctions. But what else could they do? That would be my question. Or what else could they do that wouldn't be counterproductive? 0345 6060 973. Amir is in Stanmore. Hello, Amir.
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Thank you very much for giving me this chance to talk about my country. I should mention that, you know, during 48 years ago, during the revolution, that it was absolutely wrong. Iranian people, after one day after the revolution, they realized that they did mistake. And they have tried to change everything and try to become free since that time. And every time they came to the street and protest against this brutal Islamic regime, all the time. But nobody there to help us. You know, all the time we ask Obama to come and help us. All the time we ask UK come to help us. But nothing's happened.
But what justifying what you mean by come and help us, what would you have wanted America, you know, or Britain to do?
Don't support regime in Iran. You know, the same as in South Africa when they boycott what is called apartheid regime. You know, we people came to to the street and asked Obama, please help us. But what did the USA? They just sent money in the plane to the regime. And this money, it never spent on Iranian. They spent in Lebanon, Hamas, Houthi, and all terrorist groups around the world. And just a year before, what happened with the UK? Instead of support Iranian people, they sent nearly £400 million because of the Nazanin Zaghari to the regime. All the time, Iranian people, I suppose, one of the only nation in the world that they have tried to become free for nearly 50 years from this brutal regime. And just imagine, when Israel attacked this regime this year, Iranian, most of them, they were happy. And
some of them may have been, but as our first guest, the professor, said, there are many people who actually rallied to the regime's defense when Israel attacked, even though they didn't like the regime.
Oh, you're not absolutely wrong. You know, as I'm an Iranian, I left my country 7 years ago. My parents, whole my family lived there, and I was living under this regime for 35 years. And I know many, more than many people. I know, I talk to many of my friends and everybody. The financial situation, absolutely disaster. Absolutely disaster. We have the worst currency in the world. People don't have enough money for buying necessary stuff. People, they worry to become sick because they don't have money for a doctor or for medical systems. Everything because of this regime. I should mention, Iran is not the only country. More than 3,000 years civilization. Before this brutal regime, Iran, one of the richest countries. We gave loan to many European countries. Iranian came to UK as a tourist, and they spent huge amount of money. You know, it's an important thing. People, unfortunately, forget about Iran and Persian and Iranian people. People came to UK as a tourist, spend a huge amount of money 50 years ago. Not the same as now. People come as a refugee. And I should say again, more than 10% of the population of Iran live abroad.
Mm.
Just imagine.
But tell me, if you left Iran, you said 7 years ago. Tell me what it's like to live everyday life under a regime like this. How does it affect your everyday life?
You know, every day, first of all, people, they can't cope with the inflation. When you, for example, today you pay £1 for milk, tomorrow you should pay £1.50. And everything goes up. But what about your wages? Nothing's happened.
Mm.
And then the rent goes up. The currency goes up, you know, about the pound or dollars. And people can't find medications. You know, this government, instead of trying to help people, you know, let me tell you something. This regime occupied Iran, so they don't care about Iranian people. Everything's under the regime situation. Means all factories or companies, they belong to them. They get everything, and they spend this money towards who belongs to them and support them to different kinds of authorities. It's a simple thing. So this money, when they earn from oil or gas or anything, never spend on people or provide.
So how has it managed to survive for 46 years? Because you would have thought that if things were so bad, if it was so repressive, if the economy was so bad, that it would have been overthrown before now.
Because I told you, 10% flee from the country. People living in poverty. Look at many countries in Africa. They live in poverty. But the difference is, we had many things. But gradually, we lost everything now. My parents, they are pensioners. 10 years or maybe 20 years ago, their situation a little bit much better. But nowadays, it's worse.
Mm.
It's worse. But let me tell you something, Ayat. The thing that Iranian wants, then just the world support them, not support the regime. The UK, the USA and Europe country, they should support people in Iran.
How?
And boycott regime. How? Stop the same thing that they did towards South Africa. Took out whole people who belongs to the government, the embassy, ambassador, all of them. Put the high sanction on them. It's an important thing. The thing that they did towards South Africa. It's an important thing. And you should know, Iranians, they are the high education people, educated, and more liberal. And the important country in the Middle East, not the small countries. is important thing. You should mention Iran is different as other countries in Middle East.
Just respond to this ridiculous text that I've got here from... can't read it. It says, is this Iranian chap talking about the UK or Iran? It's hard to tell. What with the prices rocketing and high cost of medicine? Well, the fact is we have free medicine in this country, and the fact is inflation is around 3%, whereas in Iran, it's well over 50%. I mean, that is just pure ignorance, isn't it, Amir?
You know, the inflation in Iran more than 50-60%. You know, every single day when my parents they get up, they worry how they cover their expenditure. They worry, you know, people are talking about the new generation, people in 20s, 30s, they don't have any hope, anything. You know, they don't have anything to lose. So the only thing that they come to the street and challenge against the government, and not just economy. You know, people they get tired of this regime. You know, you talk about brutal Islamic regime. You know, it's important things that it's the same as Nazi. You know, when Nazi occupied Europe, what about European people? What they feel? What they felt about German? My country occupied with these people for nearly 50 years. And they just gave them right. Why? Because they just want to spread Sharia, Shia, Islam around the world. Around the world. And nowadays, people realize who they are. Every single year, more people know about who they are. Mm-hmm. And now, look at the situation here. Every two years, people come to the street and against the government. And the only thing that the government did just kill people. You should mention, you know, all the time, we don't need anybody, any country's help us. Just we ask every country in the world, don't support regime. You know, it's an important thing. Just don't support regime and listen to people in Iran and try to help us. Because if Iran becomes free, you should know that we have a best and good situation in Middle East. You know, who support Hezbollah? Who support Houthi? Who support Hamas? Who support every terrorist group in the world? The Islamic regime in Iran, not Iran. Islamic regime. Then is an important thing. People should put a difference between Islamic regime and Iranian people. As I told you, 50 years ago, Iranian people, they came to UK as a tourist, spent huge amount of money. One of the, richest tourists in the UK. And UK got loan from Iran. It is a fact. And now, Iranian came here as a refugee. So the world should realize what's happened to Iran. Everything changed in 50 years. The only thing changed is the regime. And nowadays, people on the street, they ask for previous Shah's son, the Pahlavi. The important thing that so maybe the world should support Prince Reza. That maybe can help Iranian people.
Okay, Amir, we have to leave it there. I hope you feel you've had a fair shout. I've let you talk more or less uninterrupted because I think it's really important to hear from people who have direct experience of the Iranian regime. Gobar says, tell your caller it's not an Islamic government in Iran. I think he knows what kind of government it is, given that he lived under it for the first 28 years of his life. If it isn't an Islamist government in Iran, then pray tell me what it is. It's certainly not a democratic one, is it? We'll take more of your calls, getting your reaction to the situation in Iran at the moment. Do you support these protests? What do you think the West should do? Should it leave well alone? That is what Adrian says. The West should leave well alone. Look what happened when we intervened in Iraq, Libya, etc. Awful regime. But they've kept things under control, says Adrian. God, the ignorance is staggering, isn't it? It's 10:33. Let's get the news headlines from Lottie Morley.
Delays and cancellations are continuing on the Eurostar after a major power outage. Thousands of passengers have been affected as they try to get away for New Year celebrations. Iran's government says it will listen patiently to protesters as demonstrations spread outside of Tehran. People are protesting over the country's plummeting currency and inflationary pressures. And the Queen has praised racing commentator John Hunt and his daughter Amy for their courage after their family were murdered in their home. Louise, Hannah and Carol Hunt were killed by Kyle Clifford in Bushey in July last year. LBC weather, a cold one across the UK, wintry showers in the north, but staying dry and sunny elsewhere with highs of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Creatives, it's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
10:36. It really is quite astonishing, some of the WhatsApp messages I'm getting about how people don't seem to understand the nature of the regime in Iran. So I think it is really important that we hear from people who've lived under that regime and can tell us exactly what it's like or what it was like when they lived there. This one says, please keep me anonymous. In short, only a small number of government supporters went out to say they were against the Israeli attacks. Most ordinary people were waiting a few more days, hoping to see a real light at the end of the tunnel. As an Iranian professor living in the UK for over 12 years, every single morning my first action after opening my eyes is to check the news, hoping to see that the regime is gone. Solving the Iranian problem means solving most of the Middle East's problems. Supporting real change would help bring long-term peace. I think that that's a really, really important text to read out, because when he says that it would mean a lot of the problems in the Middle East would disappear overnight, I think he's got a point there. Because without Iran, Hezbollah would not have existed. Without Iran, Hamas would not exist. Without Iran, the Houthis would not exist. So I don't think that the whole of the Middle East problems would be solved if the Iranian regime changed, but it would certainly be a good start, wouldn't it? George is in Wimbledon. Hi, George.
Hello. We spoke yesterday. I feel guilty for hogging the airwaves. But my husband's Lebanese and I half live in Lebanon and I know the country really well. He's Christian. I've got a lot of Muslim friends, Sunni and Shia. And I can tell you for a fact that every Lebanese person I know, and I know a lot, are desperate for this Islamic Republic regime to fall. And as much as they hate Israel with a passion because of the history, they applauded, and some of them even opened champagne, I'm talking about the Muslims, when Nasrallah was killed last year. Mm. And those wonderful walkie-talkie explosions, which I think were inspired. The celebrations amongst most of the population, not the poor Shia in the south of Beirut, but the rest of the country. You know, they're kind of secretly loving what Israel's doing to Iran. And I do think what your caller was, the previous text was saying, is absolutely bang on, is this entire region, and as you were just saying, when Iran's out of the picture, you're going to get Gulf money coming in. They're already opening five-star hotels again in Beirut for the first time in many years. And once that Gulf money starts coming in, and money from America starts coming in, then the economic development will just be, hopefully, a new chapter for this entire region. I love Lebanon. My husband's Lebanese. I adore this country. It's beautiful.
It is. I mean, you probably heard me tell this anecdote before, but I was the first British person to go there after the release of John McCarthy in, was it 1991?
Why are you?
And I spent 3 days in Beirut. I was speaking at a conference, believe it or not, on transport privatisation, and the whole city was still basically ruins. And I got a tour of the port because I was been working in the ports industry. And I mean, it was basically inoperable because there were sort of wrecks that had to be removed before it could work again. And I got taken on somebody in the hotel that I was staying in said, would you like a tour of the Bekaa Valley? And I'd been told by the Foreign Office not to go outside the hotel without telling them, which, of course, I totally ignored. And so he took me to meet his family in the Bekaa Valley. And it was just, honestly, it was three of the best days of my life. I did feel in danger a lot of the time. I remember particularly getting a taxi to go to the port, and I said, "Oh, can you take me to a shopping street so I can get some souvenirs to take home?" And there I was in my three-piece suit walking down Beirut High Street, and I did think to myself, "I'm not sure this was such a good idea," but it was amazing.
It's a beautiful. The Bekaa Valley have some of the best wine.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Beirut, in theory, could be the sort of Monaco of the Eastern Mediterranean, couldn't it? It is that beautiful.
But you know, you talked about transport. When I walk along the Corniche or drive along the Corniche, you can see it's all boarded up and covered up. But where the old railway station used to be, and this is, I guess, another conversation: the legacy of colonialism and the French. Beautiful French architecture, riddled with bullet holes. You know, it's just the craziest scene. But this beautiful old train station all boarded up. And I said to Saeed, my husband, if this country had transport, if I was in government here, I'd be the transport minister. I'd say, right, put lights on the roads at night because there aren't any. Paint lanes so that people don't crash all the time. Open that railway station that go all the way up the coast to Petroun and up to Tripoli. It's a beautiful country. Yeah. But Iran is the problem. Iran has to go to liberate this country. Iran via Hezbollah have destroyed Lebanon. And that's the truth.
Let me read out this text to you, and I'll let you respond to it rather than me, because you're more familiar with it. Addy says, Ian Dale is helping spread the same lies about Iran as was spread by Western governments with the help of the Western media before the attack and invasion of Iraq. Saddam Hussein was the evil incarnate then. Well, he was the evil incarnate. I mean, you can't pretend that he wasn't. Why is it that so many people are texting me saying that they, effectively saying that they think the Iranian regime is somehow benevolent?
I can't speak for them. I'm not Iranian. I can't speak for Iranians. But what I do know is that Iran is a very different situation from Iraq. You know, the whole 9/11 precursor to Iraq and George Bush, that was an isolated incident. This is a regional evil that has caused death and destruction for decades. Now, I'm not taking Israel's settlements out of the equation here, because that's another, in my mind, evil. But the greater evil is Iran. And I just think it's a level of ignorance, and perhaps on the Shia side, deliberate willful ignorance to say that this is just another Iraq. It really isn't. That regime needs to go for the good of the whole world.
Okay, George, thank you very much. Carol's in Islington. Hello, Carol.
Hi. Yeah, I lived in Iran for 10 years when the Shah was there. And I was there all through the troubles when they wanted the revolution for the Ayatollah to come back. And I left 3 months after the revolution. And I lost my house, everything, my dogs. I just had to leave it all and escape with my daughter. My husband wasn't allowed out for 3 years because he was an engineer. And, yeah, I just hate it. Now they don't want this Islamic Republic. They want to get rid of it, but they got rid of the one they had before, which wasn't perfect.
Well, let me just read you out a text here from Mark, who says, wasn't Iran also a suppressed country under the Shah? You can probably answer that better than I can, Carol.
It was, but still the life was a lot better. I mean, I had a much easier life there than here. You know, I would have still been there if it hadn't have been for this Islamic revolution. I just loved it there. I just loved the people, the countryside. Oh, you know, I just loved it.
And it is a beautiful country, isn't it? And up until 1979, I think there were repressive elements to the Shah's regime. But people could dress how they liked. They had the basic freedoms that they don't have now.
People that wanted to wear the hijab could, and those who didn't have to.
Yeah.
People, you could go into the bazaar and people are in mini skirts and, you know, you just did whatever you wanted. It was a wonderful life. And, all right, there were things you couldn't do. You couldn't stand up and swear about the Shah. But, you know, you just got on with your life and everything was great. I mean, at night, you used to go to amazing nightclubs. And I used to, you know, I think I just want one night to stay in and have a bit of peace. Because you just would go out so much. You know, it was amazing.
Carol, thank you very much indeed. Mel says, it's a little bit dangerous what you're doing today. Is it really? What, highlighting the fact that people are protesting against the regime in Iran? I don't see how that's dangerous. Mel continues, you're sounding like Netanyahu. I mean, how am I sounding like Netanyahu, honestly? She continues, or is it he? When people are saying not Islamic, it's because Shia Muslims are a minority in the world, and the majority do not believe in their version of Islam. So your show using one brush for basically all of Islam is very wrong. Well, I don't think I've done that. Hamas and ISIS were directly and indirectly helped and funded by Israel. Oh dear, so nothing from Iran then, obviously. Perhaps look at it another way. If Israel was not around, the West could keep their noses out and leave Arabia alone. Truth is, they can't and won't for their own monetary reasons. So I see, Mel, Israel is the main problem here, not the brutal, repressive, dictatorial regime in Tehran. Okay, I've got where you're coming from. It's 10:46.
I'm Andrew Marr. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
You can say to the British people on Budget Day, look, things are really bad, therefore I have to raise income tax. So tomorrow I'm going to resign as Chancellor of the Exchequer, having done the right thing.
And what do you think would happen in financial markets if I did that?
It depends who took over.
President Trump seems to be waking up every morning with a new idea, and be it tariffs or something else. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's thought it through.
What's your verdict so far on how it's going?
Do despair of the risk-free be all things to all men approach of Keir Starmer, which I think is a fool's errand.
I'll be back in the new year leading Britain's conversation.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone, you can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service was really good.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. All the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:49. Loudon says, Saddam was a nasty man, yet he kept peace in the region. I mean, the delusions of these people. He kept peace in the region. I'm sure the Kurds would really agree with you on that. Do you not remember the Iran-Iraq war? Please. Rana's in Catford. Hello, Rana.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm very well. What would you like to say?
Firstly, thank you for bringing this topic up. I think just great to hear people like, was it Amir you had on earlier, speaking with such passion? Yeah, I just wanted to add my voice into the mix, really. So I wasn't born in Iran. I was actually born in the UK, but my parents were there living life. They were pretty much of the generation that were, whilst enjoying the freedoms of life under the Shah, they were also sort of wanting democracy, and things weren't always perfect and rosy. And I was just talking to your producer earlier about the experiences that my grandmother, she's no longer with us anymore, but my mum would tell me back in those days, you know, you'd go to these fancy hotels in Tehran, or actually my parents met in the south, which was quite oil rich. And my grandmother would be dressed in her chador, wanting to walk into a Hilton or something, and she'd get stopped and be told, sorry, madam, you can't step in dressed like that. It was very sort of very pro-Western, and almost Iranians were in some cases second-class citizens to some extent during those times. Now, that being said, yes, maybe my dad or, you know, family members, they were young, they were like wanting change, they wanted democracy. They kind of got caught up in quite a fever that you could almost look now in the last couple of years and see as part of the pro-Palestinian movement. A lot of young people not quite understanding the kind of complexities and the detail within that region and feeling like, yes, let's go for it. Be anti-establishment. Let's fight. And, you know, to date, my parents would say that revolution that happened in Iran was not really a revolution. Like, things just changed overnight. And what they went into the streets fighting for, I think you had another caller say, they absolutely regretted. But what happened there, you had communist kind of tendencies, you had Islamist kind of sort of desires, you had essentially people saying down with the monarchy, you know, that kind of Republican sort of feeling. And suddenly, before you knew it, things changed. You know, if you've seen The Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood got it right. It's exactly like that. You know, my mother in those early days got arrested for wearing denim because it was a symbol of the US. She got, you know, the currency then crashed, and she's carrying loads of cash in her bag. She was a nurse. She carried on being a nurse in the UK. Was arrested and basically held up, fingerprinted, or you can just imagine it. It was terrifying. So they got out, and thankfully I was born in the UK. It's so, so tragic. You know, 48 years later, here's the question, and this is what I put to your producer. Where's the opposition? There's no decent opposition. So we can all scream for Reza Shah Pahlavi to come back. The poor guy doesn't want the job. He said that. He's been very clear about it. He doesn't want to come back and rule Iran. But what he's trying to do is create, you know, a kind of movement and inspiration. But where are the decent organisations and oppositions to this regime? You know, if you dig into it.
Presumably, they're too frightened to put their heads above the parapet. And you've got to understand that. You can't force people out in the open because they know what the consequences might be.
Yeah, and the consequences are pretty bad. Like, I think this is the other thing that doesn't often get talked. But there are people, you know, the regime has people in the West. You know, there are many, you know, particularly in the UK, in the US, there are many journalists that have been targeted. And in those early days, many, many people did get killed. And so, but that being said, I mean, I don't know. I'm not politically active. I don't know how you go about doing it. And it's really tough because in those 48 years, that regime has blended. They've done something really, you know, you ask a lot of questions. What's it like to live under that regime? Now, I haven't stepped foot in that country since 2009. I refuse to. Nazanin Radcliffe's story absolutely terrifies me. As my father is Iranian, this is their way of controlling people. I cannot enter that country on my British passport. I have to go in on my Iranian passport. And as we all know, they do not recognize dual nationality again. But here's a scary thing. Even the UK right now can't even protect its own citizens. So put Nazanin to one side as a dual national. There are two Brits. They're not even got Iranian passports. There are two British people, maybe even more, but these two, that couple, they are in that country now. And what has the UK government done to get them out of there? You know, what has it done? That's the terrifying thing. So, okay, UK aside, there are also other European countries that still have deals with this regime, that make money off this regime. So as much as the West or the US, and you know what, Israel's doing a fantastic job, but even it can't do everything and it shouldn't be on them. But there are other regimes in the West and the wider world that are really benefiting from it. And let me just add to that, China, Russia, you know, those other actors. Because right now, that country, as Amir said, has been occupied for 48 years. Its wealth has been absolutely ransacked and used to funnel into all the terrorist activity, that Islamist ideology that is spreading far and wide. He mentioned the Houthis, Hezbollah, oh my God, Hamas. You keep going. There's more. And if not that, they sell land and goods and minerals and whatever they can to China and Russia. So it's a geopolitical storm. It really is. I mean, it's great that we bring this to light, though, because now on something like as simple things like cost of living, someone mentioned on one of your text messages, like we're dealing with that in the UK.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that Iranians are now saying, enough is enough. Right?
Okay, listen, Rana, I get the feeling that we could talk to you till right up to the end of the hour, but I do want to get at least one more caller on. Thank you very much for your contribution. The two people that Rana was mentioning there who are still being detained in Iran, they've been detained since January this year, Craig and Lindsay Foreman. Are those names familiar to anyone listening to this programme apart from their immediate family and friends? I suspect not. So, I mean, maybe we ought to give them a little bit more publicity. Iliad is in Manchester. Hello, Iliad.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning. What would you like to say?
I just want to just kind of follow the conversation from previous caller. She's right in some sense, but she doesn't have a full picture of what's happening in Iran. First of all, we need to say this: Iranians are very progressive in terms of politics, and they want to have better life. They've always been after the democracy, even back in 79, that revolution, this Islamic revolution has happened. Back then, even they wanted to progress to democracy. But people can change their mind. They've tried it. They failed. They felt it, the failure, for the past 45 years of this Islamic republic that rules that country. Remember, they are the minorities that the ruling over majority. Majority wants progress. The majority wants most of Iranians are well educated, well skilled within the region. Hence the reason you see that so many internal industries, from military, from the power stations, from many, many aspects. The Iranians want to progress in many ways. However, they can change their mind. They can compare what they had before in monarchy. They want the same thing back. Is that because there's lack of opposition? That's not true. There are oppositions there. You see, 79 is, if I put it right in a very simple sentence, is a cocktail of communist ideology back in 70s plus Islamic. When you mix them two, you get this toxic mixture or cocktail that is causing not only for the region, for their own people, because their ideology is failed right, left, center, is not helping Iranians, is not helping the region. That's what you get in Lebanon. That's what you see in Yemen, Iraq, and wider regions. because of that problem. And from as an Iranian that lived in UK about 15 years, and most of my life was in Iran when I was young. So what I can say is Iranian, do back Netanyahu, right? Whatever you see, you hear from here, communists here send you the text saying, oh, you sound like a Netanyahu. Oh, you sound like this and the other. But listen, what is he doing? He's doing for his own Israeli people. And that's what Iranian government doing in meddling the countries, meddling with the Lebanons, meddling with the Palestinians. Palestinian could have had their own two-state solutions about 25 years ago.
You're quite right, Ilya, but I'm afraid we have to leave it there because we've reached the end of the hour. We may take a couple more calls on this in the next hour, but I shall return to it on my evening show next week, I'm sure. Adina says, is James O'Brien back soon? Yes, he is, on Monday. So, in the next hour, I want to turn our attention to maybe a slightly lighter subject, to the fact that it's New Year's Eve today. What does New Year's mean, and what has its meaning changed over the years? Is it a time when we look back on the previous year or look forward to the next? We talk about New Year's resolutions and predictions. We'll come on to those in the next hour. But I want to know why it is also in Scotland. Why is New Year's Eve, Hogmanay, celebrated so much more than it is in the rest of the United Kingdom? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global Z's room at 11 o'clock, Eurostar officials say they plan to run services as usual today, but are warning there could be delays of up to 6 hours. Thousands of passengers have been affected after a major power outage in the Channel Tunnel yesterday. LBC's Fraser Knight has been at St Pancras International.
Hundreds have showed up, many quite early, hoping to get onto a train at some point, and they're now lined up, snaking their way around the whole of St Pancras station. New Year's plans on the continent, of course, hanging in the balance.
Iran's government says it will listen patiently to protesters as demonstrations spread outside of the capital. People are protesting over the country's plummeting currency and inflationary pressures, which have pushed up the price of food and essentials. A new governor to the central bank has also been appointed to deal with the issues. Six people have reportedly been attacked at a hospital by someone with a metal pole who was refused an appointment. A man arrested in Newton Le Willows on Merseyside has been detained under the Mental Health Act. LBC's Chris Chambers has more.
The injuries include head lacerations, severe bruising and injuries to the hands and arms. All six are now in a stable condition. Police say the weapon used was a metal bar and that the 20-year-old from Afghanistan has now been detained under the Mental Health Act. Chris Chambers, LBC on Merseyside.
More than 500 new ambulances are ready to start treating patients across England. The NHS has described it as the biggest upgrade to its fleet in recent years. They'll be equipped with new navigation technology and safety equipment. And we're being asked to think carefully about how we use the NHS. More than 1,000 people sought emergency care in England last year for things like hiccups and a sore throat. NHS England's encouraging people to use GPs or pharmacists for minor issues. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with sunshine elsewhere, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Okay, time for a proper breather. This new year, get 15% off when you book 2 consecutive nights or more at Premier Inn. Visit the family, then escape them. Back to a luxury bed instead of your auntie's sofa. Or head off on a city break that feels like a real break with checkout at midday. Start the new year with Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Book by 12th of Jan for stays between 29th of Jan and 30th of April. Standard rate rooms, UK only. Exclude Central London. Terms apply. See premierinn.com.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. 3 minutes past 11. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all this week. Now, let's talk about New Year's Eve, and let me let you into a little secret. I hate New Year's Eve. In my 63 years on this planet, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever enjoyed a New Year's Eve. And you might say, well, that's probably down to my miserable, grinchy personality. And you may have something there. But I don't like the forced jollity where everyone, because it's New Year's Eve, we all have to have a good time. We all have to sort of sing Auld Lang Syne and be jolly and merry and get drunk. And I just don't like it. When I was a teenager, a group of us from my school, this was when we were probably 15, 16, 17, we would come to London and celebrate New Year's Eve in Trafalgar Square. And even then I thought to myself, well, why are we doing this? There's actually, there was no fireworks in those days. There was no official celebration. It's just that it was a tradition that's where in England people congregated on New Year's Eve, or certainly in London. And I didn't enjoy it particularly. You ended up kissing people that you didn't really want to kiss, probably. And it was just sort of not my sort of thing at all. So then one year, 1994, when I was, how old was I then? 31, I think, or 32. I thought, okay, I'm going to go abroad. So let me enjoy New Year's Eve abroad. And for some reason unknown to me, and I don't know why I chose this place, I went to Palm Springs on my own. And I arrived there on the 30th of December. So on New Year's Eve itself, I got back to my hotel about 5 o'clock in the afternoon and thought, I'll have a little nap before the New Year's celebrations. And I'd identified a sort of party to go to. So I fell asleep and didn't wake up until 2 a.m. And that's probably been my most enjoyable New Year's Eve ever. And in recent years, we stay at home. We have our friend Jenny over. She lives in Dorchester. She usually comes and spends Christmas and New Year with us. And we tend to just watch whatever is on the television, usually Graham Norton or some celebration from Methodist Central Hall. And then you have the fireworks. And I will admit, I think the London fireworks are fantastic generally. I really do. Sometimes quite moving, sometimes really, really impressive. I think they actually do rival Sydney. I think they rival Hong Kong and New York. In recent years, once or twice, I've actually gone to bed before midnight. I probably will do tonight because I've got to get up early to come and do this show tomorrow. So I know I'm sounding a bit grinchy, but I want to know, what does New Year mean to you? And does New Year mean different things in different parts of the world? Are there different ways that people celebrate New Year's, depending on where they come from, what their religion is? Obviously, in Scotland, it is a really big thing. In many ways, it's bigger than Christmas. We talk about this on the Where Politics Meets History podcast with Tessa Dunlop, because she's Scottish. And for her, Hogmanay has always been a bigger thing than Christmas. Why? Why is Scotland so different to England? And have you changed the way that you celebrate the New Year? And if so, why? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Well, before we come to your calls, let's go live to Sydney and talk to Diane Coveney-Garland, news director at 2SM Radio. It's, I think, just after 10 p.m. there, so a couple of hours to go before the celebrations. And Diane, thank you very much for talking to us. What's New Year like in Sydney?
Look, it's a feast of colour and noise, lights and sounds. And it's actually, I live out in the suburbs and I'm at home, and it just started pouring rain. However, it's not actually raining in the city where the fireworks will be tonight. So they've had their first lot of fireworks, and then they'll have the big lot at midnight tonight. 40,000 individual fireworks, and that's around 9 tonnes of fireworks. Wow. Will be let off tonight, which is absolutely massive. And of course, we did have that shocking terror attack in Bondi a couple of weeks ago. But the New South Wales Premier and other people in Sydney have come out and said, look, we want people to have a good time. There will be extra police out, but we want people to still show up, show people that we really care about our city, and we want to show some strength in unity tonight. And what they're going to do for the victims of Bondi and for people to have a special moment for them, they're going to, the Sydney Harbour Bridge will glow white at 11 p.m., so in just under an hour. And there's going to be a minute's silence. And the beautiful thing about that is they want everybody who's in the city, on the harbour foreshore and in the CBD to have their light, their torch on their mobile phone and just light it up. So I think that's going to look absolutely spectacular. And, you know, the fireworks are going to be amazing, but I think this is going to be one of those moments which will send a chill down your spine in a nice way, like a minute's silence for those victims. But it's going to be absolutely huge. Now, I finished work. I left the city at around 3 o'clock this afternoon. As I was driving home, I was amazed that there were people all dressed up and walking down to the harbour foreshore, not far from where our office is. And then I found out that some people had lined up at 2:45 this morning, and they had their, you know, perhaps a blanket, a chair, you know, picnic basket and whatnot to get into some of the vantage points. So they have effectively been sitting in that spot since 2:45 this morning and waiting for the big fireworks display. So, I mean, look, they must be very patient people.
Well, I suppose it helps that the temperature there, I imagine, is some slightly higher than it might be in London at the moment.
Yes, it is. Look, it was a beautiful day. I think we had about 26 degrees today. So it was a little bit overcast, but nice and warm. And, you know, so I don't think anybody would have been cold. And hopefully the rain holds off in the city for the fireworks. But honestly, I don't think it will bother the revelers. I think just the opportunity to see the fireworks firsthand. So they always look good on telly, but this is even better.
And are New Year's celebrations bigger than Christmas in Australia?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Christmas is huge, but it's a time for family, friends, loved ones, and a little bit perhaps more subdued. But New Year's Eve, for example, I went for a little drive out to the store a couple of hours ago, and the number of people that were dressed up and ready to go to neighbourhood parties. Some people are just having fireworks are actually illegal to let off here unless you have a licence. However, I think some people are just having parties at home, and they'll have a barbecue and they'll be watching the fireworks on television. Others are going out in style where they're having big functions in halls and things like that. So it's a big night, and it's time to, you know, you may be with your family for Christmas, but generally for New Year's Eve, you might be with family. But a lot of work people will gather together, or just people that you haven't seen for a while. And living in a beautiful city like Sydney, I understand why people suddenly want to come and visit at this time of the year as well.
It is my favourite. It's taken over from Washington, D.C. as my favourite city in the world that I've been to. It is a marvellous place. And if anybody ever has a chance to go to Sydney, please take up the chance. It's amazing. Is it a bank holiday, presumably, on January the 1st? Of course, in Scotland, they have January the 1st and January the 2nd. We don't get that in England.
Oh, no, we don't either. See, a lot of people take from Christmas, they take the couple of days before Christmas, and then most people in general offices will be back at work next week on the Monday. So a lot of people will take extra days off, but most places will be closed tomorrow. There will be a few cafes and little supermarkets open, but generally it's a day just to where you won't find anything much open.
As you're talking, I'm getting text after text after text. Every single person is agreeing with me that they hate New Year as well. So I'm not quite sure where this phone is going to go. But
I laughed when I heard that and I thought, Ian, you have to come to Sydney. But if you've been to Sydney, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. You can't fail to have a good time in Sydney, can you? It's just one of those feel-good places.
No, that's right. Yeah. It is. It really is.
A bit different from Melbourne, which I've always found Melbourne a bit depressing.
Yeah, well, look, there's a big rivalry between Sydney and Melbourne. Melbourne, it's very cosmopolitan, but us Sydneyites, we much prefer Sydney. Yeah. And we have the better weather. See, in Melbourne, you have to dress for three or four different seasons in one day.
That's very true.
Sydney's a bit more consistent.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there. Anyway, Happy New Year, Diane. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I hope you enjoy your New Year. That's Diane Coveney-Garland from 2SM Radio in Sydney. Right, should I read out a couple of these texts that have come in? Because they are, some of them are quite amusing. Let's take one at random. Alan says, good morning, Ian and team, and Scotland celebrates Hogmanay, a great party with joy and gusto. That's certainly true. And we always wish everyone Lang Meya Lumreek, long life to all. So enjoy the change, the old into the new. That's Alan in Reigate. Oh, I thought he was in Scotland. Clearly not. And this is from Sam. You're not alone, Ian. I hate New Year's Eve. You go to a party, it gets to 11 p.m. and everyone has to wait until Auld Lang Syne, and then you have to decide when it's not rude to make a rush for the door. I stay in now and refuse kind invitations. It's the biggest letdown of the year. That's lots of love, Sam the Grinch from Cambridge. No, I completely get it, Sam. 0345 6060 973. Now, apparently, the Scots celebrate Hogmanay because Christmas was banned in Scotland for 400 years. Something I suspect, like me, many of you never knew. And I'm a quarter Scottish, and apparently distantly related to Robbie Burns. So I ought to know these things. So I'll tell you why that was in just a few minutes' time. It's 11:15 on LBC.
This is LBC.
Brighten your January with the Big Hendy Sale. Get up to £1,000 off selected used vehicles across every dealership and brand in the fantastic Hendy range. From sporty to spacious, from petrol to hybrid and all-electric powertrains, we've got a vehicle to match every style and budget. Don't miss out. These offers won't last forever. Head down to your nearest Hendy dealership today and drive into the new year with incredible value and a car you'll love. Offer on used vehicles only. T's and C's apply.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
Sail into 2026 and save 15% when you book early. Pastries in Paris, wine tasting in Bordeaux, skiing in Chamonix. Your European adventure starts here with P&O ferries from Dover to Calais. Book early for 2026 and save 15% off standard fares for long breaks. Book now at poferries.com. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Travel without the travel.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
16 minutes past 11 on LBC. You know, there is a really good way to celebrate New Year, and it's with Nick Abbott on LBC. And believe it or not, Nick Abbott is going to be live on this programme in the next hour, because I've asked Sheila Fogarty, Nick Abbott, well, I say I asked, Eleanor asked them, Sheila Fogarty, Nick Abbott and Simon Marks to come and tell us what their New Year's resolutions are and their predictions for 2026. I don't think I've ever had Nick Abbott on my programme before, so I feel extremely privileged that he's agreed to do it. So we'll be doing that in the next hour, getting your ideas for your own predictions of for 2026 and maybe resolutions that you have made in the past, but possibly haven't kept, because I think virtually everybody, I mean, I've stopped it now because I just don't ever keep them, so what's the point? So, another theory about why things have changed in the last few years about the way we celebrate New Year. I wonder if there's something post-COVID about this. Because during COVID, I mean, there was was it two or three Christmases? I think two Christmases and New Year's, where we were effectively banned from having anybody in our house apart from our immediate family. And I think people did change the way that they looked at New Year and Christmas then. Did we realise that we actually didn't have to conform to these social pressures, this forced jollity that is forced on many of us over New Year? 0345 6060 973. Let's go to Gillis, who is in Arbroath. Gillis, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Now, I imagine, being in Scotland, you are an avid celebrator of Hogmanay.
Absolutely. Well, it's not so much Hogmanay, we're an avid celebrator of New Year's. And really, Hogmanay is a small part. It's actually New Year's Day and the 2nd, and now the 3rd, because we've got a weekend coming up.
Yes.
Which will actually take it all in.
So just to explain to Southerners exactly what Hogmanay is and means.
Well, New Year, because people have started saying Happy Hogmanay, and we've never ever said that, you know, we never have. Hogmanay really was a time where you got ready for it, you know. You got the food on, you had plenty refreshments, and you welcomed people in after the bells. It's after the bells, that's the important part. It's the New Year, that's the important part. New Year was banned in Scotland, as you said before, due to John Knox and the Reformation. So the Presbyterian Church here banned the merriment of Christmas. We didn't do that. One thing they couldn't ban was New Year, because you can't ban the turning of the year. Mm. So that's when people celebrated, and it's endured.
I mean, I'm just reading here that it was only in 1958 that Christmas Day became a public holiday in Scotland.
That's right. And I think 1972, when we got a public holiday on Boxing Day.
74, it says here.
74, sorry, 72, 74. Yeah, that's right, exactly. So whilst Christmas has gotten, obviously, I would say more commercialised, New Year is still a big thing here. And although, having said that, I remember New Year's, I mean, I'm 64, I remember New Year's heading down to the local church, you know, listening to the bells, bringing in the bells, and then heading off to
I used to ring the bells in my village when I was 18. I was a campanologist. Who'd have thought?
Oh, brilliant. Well, I've got a friend who does that in Dundee, actually.
So it's more difficult than it looks.
Yeah, absolutely. I should imagine it would do. One of the other things as well, you know, the tradition of having a tall, dark stranger come into your home. They are lucky. So that's the person that you want coming in the back door. But that goes back even further, back to Viking times, when anyone with blonde hair was presumed to be a Viking marauder. So if they had dark hair, they were generally a Scot.
You see, that's an interesting one to explain to your 5 or 6 year old children, isn't it? Now, every other day of the year, we do not want dark strangers coming into our house. But on this day, we're happy to welcome them in.
Fantastic.
And are you familiar, I'm sure you are, with the practice of first footing?
Well, that's the whole point. You see, it's not Hogmanay. We gather in Hogmanay, that's fine, but that's just the start. But first footing is actually really the thing. So you take a parcel, you take a present, and you go out and you visit your friends and your family. My aunt had an open house on New Year's Day. So we would have very many people that would come in, people that we didn't know, who heard the singing, who heard the merry, you know, all of that. So, yeah, first footing is the thing, and that's what I'll be doing.
Hasn't it got something to do with coal?
Well, coal, yeah, you know, I suppose when people had coal fires and things like that, but it was to bring in heat, warmth, good fortune, you know, so that long may your long reap, as your texts have said earlier. That's what it means, really.
Well, you have enlightened us. You've educated us, Gillis. What more could I ask for? So what are you doing this evening, then?
Well, this evening I'm going up to Dundee to bring in the New Year with the friends up there. And then I'll come back tomorrow and I will first suit my mother. I will then, who's 93, and she'll be up for the bells, probably. And then I will go various places. We've got a few places that we always go to every year. And then on the 2nd, I've got folk coming down here. So we'll have a bit of a party here. And on the 3rd also.
Where exactly is Arbroath in Scotland? I do know it because it's... Yeah, well, I know that's showing great ignorance on my part. I do know the football team Arbroath, but if you said pinpoint it on a map, I might have a bit of difficulty.
Yeah. Okay, so we're about 17 miles north of Dundee on the coast.
Right.
So, yeah, right up on the coast, and it's a beautiful day. It's absolutely freezing, very frosty, but clear. So a really, really good night to start off the New Year celebrations, actually. Apart from all the weather warnings we've been getting, but we'll just ignore those as well, as we generally do.
Have a great time, and thank you very much for gracing my show this morning. That's Gillis in Arbroath. Robert's in East Grinstead. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Ian. Hi. I did do that work as promised. I did a little 3 hours here and there throughout.
Oh, now you're referring to the call that you made on Christmas Day. Remind us what you were doing.
Well, it was just before Christmas, but I've done about 3 hours work at various service stations and McDonald's with good internet, just doing the writing just for a catalogue. I'm just cataloguing up.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Worth the work. Lovely to listen to that lady, really interesting. I'm got Scottish ancestry in me as well. But just, you know, taking us back south of Hadrian's Wall, I will just say to you from Sussex, seven swans are swimming. No, the new year just means continuity onto the remaining days of Christmas. And
What's that got to do with swans?
Well, five gold rings. I think it's seven swans are swimming on the 12 days. So there are 12 days of Christmas.
Right.
And I believe we're on the seventh day of Christmas.
Oh, I see what
today.
You mean.
So we've still got some days to go, and I think that is one of the really lovely things about New Year, is wandering around the City of London. The Christmas decorations are still up and everywhere. I've just been into Crawley Mall, and shame on them, they've taken the decorations down
there.
No. Yes, it's terrible. And also Haskins Garden Centre, who is a lovely garden centre, by the way, but their Christmas sort of seems to start about sort of end of September and ends on Boxing Day. And I think I've just been chatting to the manager there. I think they would be doing the hotel a big favour over the road by putting some lights back on one of its huge big conifers that it used to have about 5 years ago every year. So, but I like New Year's Day. I very much, and I feel sorry for you and your reticence of it.
Well, I suppose it's different for everybody, isn't it? I would love to have a great time on New Year's Eve. I remember as children, we'd always go and visit our relations in Blackmore in Essex, or they were then moved to Epping, and
right.
We'd go for long walks around the farm, and it often snowed in New Year's in those days. It never snowed at Christmas, apart from one year, I think 1969, but often it snowed, and I remember... I think it was the first year the M11 was open. My dad had a Morris Minor pickup truck, and three children were put in the back under the tarpaulin. And I mean, imagine doing that now. You'd be arrested and sent to prison for child abuse. And so we 30 miles in the back of a Morris Minor pickup truck going to Epping in the snow. Those were the days. Thank you very much, Robert. One of my favourite callers is on the line. You know who it is. It's Sean in concert. Happy New Year, Sean.
All the best for 2026. I tell you what, I'm laughing at the people in Scotland and London, you know, for the prices of beer, right? We're going to pay £2 a pint, open concert, right? To the ones in London and Scotland.
Is that subsidised by the taxpayer?
No, it's subsidised by Witherspoon's in concert.
Oh, right.
£2 a pint.
Is that every day or just for New Year?
No, all the year round.
How on earth do they make a profit out of that?
You see, there you go now. That we're not like Londoners, you know, stuck up little children, you know what I mean?
Oh, please.
And
I'm not a Londoner,
not like
but
Scotland,
I'm going to...
put 50% on your beer.
You can't categorise all Londoners as stuck-up little children. I'm sure there is the odd one
Scotland's
that is.
The same. I don't understand how everybody goes to Scotland for New Year. 50% on beer. What the hell's going on in this country?
But there's a lot of tax on beer in England.
Ah, but not in concert, there's not.
The free republic of concert.
I tell you what it is, mate. Hey, I don't know. I think yous are thick. And the people in concert.
And oh, so we're stuck up and we're thick. Okay.
Because you're paying £8 a pint.
Well, I'm not paying that.
You're absolutely idiots.
I'm not paying that.
No, but I'll be.
Because I don't drink.
I know that. Wait, that's good. But at the end of the day, cups of teas will be twice the price of what it is in concert.
So is that what you're doing tonight, going down to Wetherspoons?
I'm not going out, mate. I'm waiting for the Celtic Rangers match on Saturday.
And which...
But I tell you what it is, mate. I wish you all the best in the world, but I am laughing at Londoners in Scotland. £2 a pint.
Okay. And so, did you have a good Christmas, Sean?
I did, mate. Aye, and yourself?
Well, I was working. I've been working every day, so I haven't had much of...
I've got a load of smellies, like, I don't know what they think I am. They must think I stink, don't get a bath.
Well, it is. I mean, if you're going to insult people from London, I mean, maybe I should insult people from concert and say you all stink in concert.
We are clever people up here. We don't rip people off up here.
Do you know what I discovered the other day? I discovered the death notice of my great grandfather who died in concert in 1929. And it had all the list of all the Dale relations that came down from Ayrshire and up from Essex to go to the funeral, which it's sort of quite moving to find that in a way. My sixth cousin, Fiona, sent it to me. She's been doing a lot of research in the family history. As I think I've told you before, sort of my grandfather and great-grandfather came down to concert in the early part of the 1900s and worked in the steelworks. So it was a little bit of family history, and I'm going to deliver on that promise one day, Sean, when I come up to concert.
I'll tell you what it is, mate. Come in the Witherspoons and I'll get you a pint for £2.
I'll have a perno in black.
I do wish you all the best, right, and everybody listeners and all that. But catch yourself on £8 a pint when I'm paying £2.
All right. I think you've made your point there, Sean. Happy New Year. Thank you very much indeed. So how has the way that you celebrated New Year changed? That theory that I posited earlier about maybe COVID has changed the way people think about New Year. Maybe we don't feel that we have to have this forced jollity anymore. I wonder whether that is a thing. 0345 6060 973. It's 11:31 on LBC. Let's get the news headlines from Lottie Morley.
Eurostar says it's hoping to run most of its trains today, but passengers are being told to expect delays. Some were left stranded on services overnight after a big power outage in the Channel Tunnel yesterday. Iran has appointed a new governor to the central bank after the country's currency plummeted, leading to large protests. Demonstrations are entering their fourth day and have spread to outside of Tehran. And forecasters say it could snow across most of the UK in a chilly start to 2026. The Met Office has issued a yellow warning for snow and ice for large parts of England and Wales from midnight. LBC weather, a cold day with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry and sunny elsewhere with highs of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, the Home Instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. Drop up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with
T-R-I-P. Think, do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy?
Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
11:34. Well, I've had a torrent of messages saying that Sean needs to give his head a shake, basically, because Wetherspoons charge the same for a pint of beer all over the country. Though somebody's here saying in Uxbridge it's £1.89 all year round. Other people saying £2.40. But it's not just in concert where you get cheap beer in Wetherspoons, but end of the adverts for Wetherspoons. I think they normally have to pay for that sort of thing. James says, loving hearing your thoughts on this debate on New Year's Eve, Ian. I'm 2.5 years clean and sober. On the actual eve of New Year's Eve, I feel a lot less pressure. But to me, it can signify something, a beginning of an era or an end of an era. This year, professionally, it will mean something to me as I intend on shaking things up professionally in 2026 in a measured, reflective and calm way. I think you're typical of a lot of people, James, there, and that people do reflect on the previous year and then look forward to the next year. I think people do try and make some changes to their lives, whether it's on the health front. I mean, I'm rather sick of people who overindulge over Christmas and New Year and then think, oh, I'll join a gym. And then 3 weeks later, they chuck in their gym membership because they haven't got the self-discipline to carry on with it. I wonder whether that's happened to you. How do you celebrate New Year differently to previous times? Is it a bit like Christmas, that as you get older, your habits change at New Year? I think all of us who enjoyed Christmases as children find that they're very different as you get older, and you realise it is actually all about children. And they're not as enjoyable as they used to be. And you can never quite recreate the magic of those childhood Christmases, can you? No matter how much you try. Matt says, Ian, was your alcohol cessation a New Year's resolution? Well, actually, funny enough, that is something I'd forgotten. Because the first radio program I ever appeared on was Giles Brandreth's Sunday afternoon show on LBC in 1999. And he would have a panel of people talking about sort of cultural things. And I was on New Year's Eve it must have been 1998, I guess. And he went round the table and said, what's your New Year's resolution? And you know that panicky thought you get when you think, I'd literally, my brain has gone completely empty. I can't think of a single thing. So I just blurted out, I'm going to give up drinking. And I never was a big drinker, partly because I had a very low tolerance for alcohol, 2 vodka and oranges, and I was anybody's, basically. I never drank beer, didn't particularly enjoy wine. I could drink wine socially, but didn't enjoy it. So I said to Giles that I would give up drinking, and I did. And I can't remember the last time I had an alcoholic drink. I might have 2 or 3 a year. Various LBC producers over the years have found it very amusing when we go out for a drink one evening, particularly at party conferences, and they kind of like force an alcoholic drink down my throat, usually a WKD Blue, because I'm a classy kind of guy. Or a Pernod and Blackcurrant. That was actually, you know, the only alcoholic drink I ever enjoyed. And I did have one of those this year. Those of you who've never drunk it, it's liquid aniseed, basically. Eleanor is shaking her head in absolute disgust. Just listen to this one. The first time I ever got drunk was when I was at university. And a friend of mine says, right, going to take you out and get you drunk tonight. We went to what was it called? Was it Ritzy's Nightclub in Norwich? I had 11 Pernod and Blacks in 2 hours. 11. and obviously got extremely drunk, went back to my residences and threw up in the toilet. And believe me, if you have a mixture of Pernod and blackcurrant on a toilet, the porcelain toilet, it's the stain stays there for like 3 weeks. And I then started to think, well, if it stains the toilet for 3 weeks, what does it do to your stomach? Have I got any listeners left, by the way? I'm just inquiring. 0345 6060973. Eleanor's just put on my screen. No, with about 20 no's. Oh, my God. Yes, I know. The revelations that I sometimes reveal on this programme, possibly I should keep to myself. But anyway. Right, let's take another couple of texts. I think Christmas was banned for 400 years in Scotland, hence New Year's Eve celebrations. That's from Kev. Yep, we covered that a little bit earlier. Guess what, Sean? Wetherspoon's beer prices are the same all over the country. Laughing at Sean. Linus says, thanks, Ian, for the Hogmanay. In my student days in Dundee, I used to have a great Hogmanay with my adopted family in Brechin. Bring the tall, dark and handsome first footer with a piece of coal, blessing the family at the turn of the clock. And this is from Jane, who says, I loved your Arbroath caller, so informative. I live in Scotland and a lot of my friends and relatives do not celebrate New Year. I decided to have a few friends over for some drinks and some food. I was saying to my colleagues, there does seem to be a lot of negativity around New Year. I understand that a lot of people, myself included, reflect and miss loved ones that are no longer here. I think it's important to celebrate life and live well for those no longer here. I also said to friends and colleagues that we are lucky to be employed and live in a peaceful country where a lot of us don't want for anything. From my friends and family point of view, this negative feeling about New Year predated COVID. Well, very interesting perspective there. Let's go to Paul, who is in Bolton. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Ian. I wanted to ring up to stick up for New Year. I also don't think that... I think we like to put the blame on COVID for a lot, but for some people that might be the case, but for other people, I know myself, I was determined to get out and about and doing things again after COVID, and I was actually doing things during COVID because I was allowed to go to support groups and stuff. So I think, yeah, there might be something in what you say, but then there'll be another section of people. I'm sure if I go to many bars on Canal Street tonight, they'll still be packed out and quite stressful to be in. So there'll still be enough people doing it, even if there's lots of people staying at home. But it actually drives me mad when people say that, oh, I'm not going out New Year, I've got my PJs and my takeaways coming and watching telly. And all they've done is moan about the television over Christmas. So I never quite get the logic behind people with things like New Year and that. And also,
well, to be fair, and if you were listening to my Christmas Day show, I talked about this. I mean, Christmas television has been absolute sugar, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, if you were going to ask people, have they seen after things you say repeats, I bet they've not seen them in the first place. So, it's up to people what they want to watch, but we've got plenty of things we can watch. It's a first world problem in this.
Reduced to starting to watch 24 again on ITVX, because the whole 9 series are now on ITVX. And I've got to, I think I've watched 6 episodes of the first series now, which is great, because I mean, first watched it, 20 years ago. But, yeah. Obviously there are new series on that I could have watched, but generally now I find most TV dramas just a turn off.
Well, I watched a brilliant one called What It Feels Like for a Girl on BBC Three this year, and most people who watched it thought it was brilliant. It was about Paris Lee's life. I don't know if you caught any
of it, no, Paris Lee's has been a guest on my programme many times. Yeah, I haven't heard of that.
That was a brilliant drama. It's still on BBC iPlayer. But, yeah, but as I say, I just think, to be honest, it's mad because I'm on the left side of politics and really I should be the one moaning about commercialism at Christmas and New Year. And I'm finding a lot of people who probably have more right-wing opinions than me are moaning about the commercialism. And I thought, well, isn't that what capitalism is supposed to be about? You know, spend all the time.
Up to a point. And I mean, I'm rather glad that we don't all do New Year's presents in the way that we do Christmas presents, because that would be almost licensed extortion, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. And like I say, everyone can do what they want with it. As I've just said to you, switchboard, I love having events in our calendar, and it doesn't mean I do a big thing every year for each of them. I especially don't do anything for Valentine's, but I love the fact we start off with Valentine's, we've got Easter, we've got summer events, we've got Bonfire Night, Halloween. I love them, and I don't feel I have to do them every year, but I just love the fact that they're there and I can dip into them. And if there's times when my life's not up to it, then I don't. And this year I wanted to go out for New Year. I'm not going out in the end, but hopefully next year I will go out again, because I'm not, even though I'm nearly 50, I'm still not hanging me dancing shoes up just yet. You know what I mean? So I just think, I think people should just, and another thing is you know yourself, if it was going around social media that a group of people were saying we can't say Christmas and we can't have New Year, then loads of people are saying they're not into Christmas and New Year would suddenly be saying they are into it, and loads of people taking trees down on Boxing Day. I don't even get that. I know that's coming off New Year a bit, but why can't people just embrace, like, Twixmas, as they call it, the bit between Christmas and New Year? Because it's just a more relaxing part, I think. And then January, everyone moans about that, but it's like the one month of the year when you don't really have to do anything, isn't it? It's
well, like that, no well, pressure. Well, that is true, mainly because you're feeling so bloated after the sort of exertions of Christmas and the New Year, I suppose. You've got a fan, Paul. My friend Richard has just texted me saying, I'm falling in love with Paul from Bolton. I wish I was going out on Canal Street tonight, but alas, I'm singing. So you haven't pulled, oh, Paul, I'm afraid.
Well, yeah.
But the days get young.
Sorry?
The days get young. Have a good time tonight, Paul. Thank you very much indeed. Glenn says, we have the children and partners over, plus grandchildren, 13 in total. You can't sit round a table with 13. My mother would never have allowed that because it's unlucky. Otherwise, if we go out, my wallet takes a right bashing. Like your previous caller paying £2 a pint, not around here it isn't. Well, it might be if you go down to the spoons, as I gather young people call it. Amy says, morning Ian, to be honest, I used to be a heavy drinker. I don't drink anymore these days, just happy to wake up sober. The thought of people over drinking turns me off going out, so it's a quiet one for me. Well, I think a lot of people will relate to that, because I think if you do have issues with alcohol, I think Christmas and New Year's is a very, very difficult time for many people. Keep your calls coming, 0345 6060 973. It's 11:45.
I'm Nick Ferrari. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
It's not a racist at all to have concerns about your children, one of whom's going to secondary school soon.
If not being a racist means my children are subject to being murdered, going about their daily business, I'll quite happily say that I am.
Is there much point continuing this conversation? Because you don't know where a bridge starts, you don't know where it ends, and you don't know how much it costs.
Nigel Farage came up and claimed you had an obsession with him.
No, that's not the case. I am deeply concerned about reform because I think they will toxically divide our country.
You mentioned Mr. Farage five times.
You are mildly obsessed.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:48 on LBC. Ollie says, imagine aliens are watching us from afar. They are, you know. And suddenly, every 365 days, see us dance and sing, performing some annual ritual because we orbited the sun. I suppose it's possible. I wonder what aliens would make of a game of charades, because that's what a lot of people play. I used to love playing charades at Christmas. Although, look, I think every family has different traditions around this period, don't they? And one of ours was we would go and visit relations over Christmas and the New Year, and we would play cards with them all, with the parents and the grandparents and the children, and we would have little mini whist drives, which I suspect if you're under the age of 30, you haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. But, I mean, whist is a sort of a weaker version of bridge, a easier version of bridge. And you have trumps and you sort of... Well, I'm not going to explain it all on air, but it was one of those things that people we just did at Christmas time. And my dad would go to whist drives in different villages around the area, maybe three or four nights a week. And I used to go with him, I mean, from probably about the age of nine. And I used to absolutely love it. And you'd sometimes have 80, 100 people at these things. And there was always sort of like Christmas turkey as the main prize at the pre-Christmas whist drive. And you have tins of biscuits and Quality Street and whatever. And in some ways, it was a much simpler time. And that was obviously in the days before computers and the days before mobile phones. And it's just one of those Christmas traditions which seems to have disappeared now. And I think it's a shame, because I think card games are things that can really, really do bring families together in a way that some things don't. So we're asking the different ways that that New Year celebrations have changed. Why do so many people, it seems, agree with me that they don't like New Year, that there is this jollity that you're supposed to enjoy yourself, so you will enjoy yourself. Well, I don't know about you, but I can't enjoy myself unless it comes naturally. I don't want anybody to tell me that, oh, stop being sort of really sad. You've got... I do sometimes get a bit sad on New Year's Eve, because it is a time of reflection. It is a time when you think about the previous year, people, and the older you get, the more people that you lose. You tend to go to more funerals and you go to weddings the older you get. So naturally, you think about those that you've lost, particularly if it's someone very, very close to you. I can remember the Christmas after my mother died, I mean, just feeling utterly bereft. And the New Year, I mean, there's no way that I was ever going to enjoy that year's New Year. So you do tend to get a little bit morose sometimes. I mean, not everybody does. And I think sort of the innocence of youth disappears over time when you do face the harsh realities of life. If you've had a year in your professional life where you maybe haven't done what, haven't succeeded in ways that you wanted to at the beginning of the year, you inevitably start thinking, well, what's the next year going to hold? Am I still going to be doing this job in a year's time? Am I going to enjoy it? Am I going to get promotion? Am I going to, if things, times are difficult, am I going to have to cope with the pay cut? I think a lot of people go through that at New Year as well. Let's go to Anne, who is in Dane Hill in East Sussex. Hello, Anne.
Hello, Ian. I haven't talked to you for a long time.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I lived in Crieff as a child, which is in central Scotland, though my family were all from Nairnshire. And we had people coming in at Christmas Eve until, unfortunately, my father died on the 23rd one year when we were all in our teens. So it changed New Year for us totally. But I always remember it as being a very exciting time waiting for people to come visit us.
And that was a real thing, wasn't it? Sort of, yes. Like it, either friends, but particularly relations, mm-hmm. not all of whom you might think would be how can I put this without offending anybody? I mean, it's a bit like friends. You have close friends, you have less close friends, you have close relations, you have less close relations. But, I mean, I just remember those, certainly teenage years and earlier, as being times when there might be people that you would only see once or twice a year, and invariably you would have a good time with the odd family row thrown in for a bit of entertainment.
Exactly, exactly. But it was always a very, very lovely time when they started coming in. You know, you'd had Christmas, but in Scotland, of course, Christmas was, again, I mean, I'm 86 now, so I can remember Christmas when it was Christmas. But in reality, it was the dear friends that came in, the ones that always came in at Christmas, and then the people that you always had lunch with at Christmas, at New Year. So it was a special time, a very special time.
And how, now that you're living in, well, it doesn't get much more south than East Sussex, does it? How do you find that you celebrate New Year differently to that which you did when you lived in Scotland?
We don't do it. Well, at this time of life, we don't actually have people come in at night any longer, but we do have people coming in tomorrow, have dear friends coming in to celebrate tomorrow, which is nice.
And do you find that you have to explain Hogmanay to people in East Sussex?
I think, in point of fact, most people that I know now know that I can tell them about Hogmanay until I'm blue in the face, because I've always enjoyed it. But then, of course, when I was nursing, we tried to do something on New Year's Eve if we could for the patients, and then on. So it's always been a special. I can remember the time when New Year was more important than Christmas.
Well, I think it sort of always has been in Scotland.
It
never has been in England, though. I'm sure there is the odd person that prefers New Year to Christmas, but it's unusual, isn't it? Which is strange when you think that, I mean, we are ostensibly a United Kingdom, and yet we have these different traditions in different parts.
We certainly do. Now, I believe that some of your family was from Nairnshire, weren't they?
No, Ayrshire.
Ayrshire.
I don't know. Where is Nairnshire?
Nairnshire is Nairn, is up on the coast of Scotland, the west, on the east coast, right at the very top.
Yeah,
Cawdor Castle, that area.
Yeah, I don't think... I've got some sort of ancestors in Edinburgh, but they all came from Ayrshire. So when I was up there for the Fringe last year, I got shown various places in Edinburgh where my family had businesses. Like, there was one in Nicholson Square, which is quite famous in Edinburgh, which it's now a Middle Eastern perfumery. But when the Campbell side of my family, they had a sort of drinks business there. So it was fascinating to sort of visit all of these places and then see some of the gravestones. There's a fantastic graveyard. I can't remember what it was called. And they have these massive headstones, sort of, and so just to sort of think, oh my God, that's why one of my ancestors buried there. It was quite something.
My father's family were one. They had 9 brothers and sisters, believe it or not, in Edinburgh, and they had a printing firm, which was kind of interesting. So that they used to print banknotes, one of the banks, which was always a big thing in our houses, that grandfather printed banknotes.
And I think also, particularly in a city like Edinburgh, you walk around parts of the old town where you can imagine what Edinburgh was like back in the 1770s when my ancestors would have been sort of wandering those very same streets. There's a certain a certain atmosphere to it, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And funnily enough, apparently my relations originally came from Liverpool, which is kind of interesting. We always wondered why. But that was way back in the... in the days. So what are you doing for New Year's Eve? Something nice?
I shall be at home. I shall watch the fireworks at midnight, probably, if I haven't already gone to bed. I've sort of got into the habit now, since I've been doing this show, where I go to bed a lot earlier than I normally would. I normally go to bed 1-2 o'clock in the morning. But over the past few days, I've gone to bed about 10 o'clock. But then I watch an episode of 24 on my laptop on the pillow. So I don't know why I bother, but I'm fed up. My partner, and this is probably everyone can relate to this, my partner has this obsession with watching Midsummer Murders or Inspector Morse or these programs that are on ITV3 all the time. And I'm thinking, you've already watched these, which I know is a bit rich when I'm watching 24, which I've already watched, but I cannot abide them. So I just can't sit there and sort of fiddle on my computer. I just leave the room and go to bed. So I'm probably going to be very antisocial tonight, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear.
But anyway, you have a great new year. Thank you very much, Anne. Text here from Evan in West Wales. I think for those who've experienced loss or illness, a new year can simultaneously symbolically signify closure and a fresh start. Absolutely agree. I won't really be celebrating tonight. I find the world cities competing for the biggest fireworks displays tacky and commercial. I celebrate the days getting slightly longer this time of year, and my big day is when the swallows return to our barn each year, as it signifies for me the true start of summer. Wishing you, your team and your listeners a fabulous 2026. Well, Evan, thank you very much indeed, and the same to you. Well, we're going to continue the New Year theme in the next hour, and we're going to be talking about your predictions for 2026, and maybe are you still somebody who makes New Year's resolutions and then breaks them after 3 days. So if you're going to make a New Year's resolution, I'm going to be nosy and ask you what it is. But I'm also interested in your predictions for 2026, whether it's to do with your work life, your personal life, politics, world affairs, anything. I'd love to hear what you predict will happen in 2026. I just published on my Substack last night my 10 predictions for the year. I'll read those out, see how many of them you agree with, and we'll get predictions from Sheila Fogarty, from Simon Marks, and yes, Nick Abbott.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, most Eurostar services across the channel have now resumed after a power outage caused major disruption. Hundreds of people were left stranded on Eurostar and the shuttle services overnight. Sean Tipton is from ABTA. He told LBC people who book through a tour operator should have the cost of alternative travel arrangements covered.
The problem is, though, it's just the time of year. Its availability. I mean, we did some research a couple of weeks ago to see how many people would be travelling over Christmas and New Year, and it was over 5 million. So, and at very short notice, just before New Year's Eve, I think with the best will in the world, I just think it would have been very difficult to find anything.
Iran has appointed a new governor to the central bank after the country's currency plummeted, leading to large protests. Demonstrations are entering their fourth day and have now spread to outside of Tehran. The Iranian government says it wants to listen patiently to protesters. The victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be honoured before Sydney's New Year's fireworks shortly. 15 people died in a shooting there earlier this month. Extra armed officers have been deployed to patrol the harbour's celebrations. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says 2026 has been tempered by the sadness.
What Bondi also showed us was the best of the Australian spirit in all its courage and compassion. And that is why I'm optimistic and determined that in the new year we will rise to meet the challenges ahead of us.
The Queen has praised racing commentator John Hunt and his daughter Amy for their courage after their family were murdered in their home. Louise, Hannah and Carol Hunt were killed by Kyle Clifford in Bushy in July last year. The Met Office has issued a new weather warning for snow and ice on Friday. It covers most of Scotland and large parts of England and Wales. Forecasters say last night was the coldest night of the winter so far across the UK. And it's now 2026 in Auckland in New Zealand. Australians are getting ready to bring in the new year in just over an hour. Preparations are underway in London as well, with many viewpoints already closed off. And forecasters say Hogmanay celebrations should be cold but dry after last year was called off. LBC weather, a chilly afternoon across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good afternoon. It's 2 minutes past 12 on LBC. I'm Ian Dale, standing in for James O'Brien all this week. It's really odd to think that this is actually the last hour of radio that I'll be presenting on LBC this year. I had you going there, didn't I? Some of you were thinking, thank God for that, it's taken 15 years. But no, I'm afraid you've got me for all of next year, at least. New Year is a time, as I said in the last hour, for reflection, but it's also a time for looking forward. And I think, I would hope that everyone can look forward to 2026 in a relatively optimistic way. Now, that's easy to say, isn't it? When you have a reasonably nice life, your personal life is fine, your work life is fine. But of course, there are many people listening who won't be in that position. And I wonder whether you sort of look forward to the new year with anticipation, but also a slight feeling of dread. Because I think once you think things aren't going well for you, you sort of tend to think, well, nothing's ever going to change. But things can change. And, I mean, New Year ought to be a time for optimism. And so what I want to do in this hour is two things. I want to ask you, well, two things, for your predictions for 2026 and for your resolutions for 2026. Now, these could be personal. They could be to do with world events, politics, anything you like, really. And I always compile a list, because I do love a list. And I compile a list at the beginning of every year, and I make predictions for what will happen in the following year. So these were my predictions for 2025. I didn't do particularly well in 2025, but I want to hear what yours are for 2026. I said Donald Trump and Elon Musk will have the mother of all fallouts. Well, I was right in that. Netanyahu will not be Prime Minister of Israel by the end of 2025. Incorrect. The CDU wins the German election and forms a coalition which includes the SPD. Well, I was right on that. I'm a Celebrity comes to an end. Well, that was wishful thinking on my part. Justin Trudeau loses power in Canada. Well, that was correct. Peter Dutton becomes Prime Minister of Australia. That was incorrect. Trump brokers the end of the war in Ukraine. Putin hails it as a victory. Well, we all know what's happened there. The British economy goes into recession. Not quite. Reform UK outpolls both Labour and the Conservatives at some point during 2025. So that was correct. And Katia Adler joins the Today programme. Incorrect. So I got 4 out of 10. Now, Simon Marks is joining me now. We're going to have Sheila Fogarty and Nick Appleton a little bit later to give their predictions for 2025. Now, I've got my list of 10 predictions here. I don't know how many you've got that you want to elucidate on, Simon. But how are you feeling? Because you've had a bit of a tough time.
I'm fine, actually. I mean, I think I'm bouncing back from the London lurgy, which has, as listeners will know if they've been listening to my programmes throughout the last few days, has rendered my voice less characteristic than I would like it to be. But I think we're bouncing back, Ian. I think we're on the road to recovery, just in time to go back to the United States and brace myself for another year of Donald Trump. You know, just a few days ago in this time slot, James O'Brien asked me what I thought was going to happen in the US in 2026 at the end of an interview that we were doing. And I'm afraid I just sighed this deep sigh. You know, so my predictions can probably be encapsulated in that deep sigh.
But for people in the news business, I mean, Donald Trump is box office. Isn't it? I mean, yeah. I suppose you have to look at these things through the prism of being a news journalist, but also for being somebody who lives in the United States, sort of just as an ordinary citizen.
Yes, well, not as an American citizen, perish the thought as an outside observer, even though I've been there for so long. I mean, yes, it is definitely a challenge. I think there's no question about that, and there are moments when you do begin to question exactly what you're doing. I was sitting at home 3 weeks ago today preparing my American Week for you know, Tom's show that Friday afternoon, and realizing that I was spending time trying to edit the bleep noise that we use to cover up profanity so that I could cover up a word that the American president had used to describe countries that send migrants to the United States from Africa, and trying to fit exactly the right amount of bleep into the word so that you could certainly get a sense of what the word was while also and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, really? Is this what it's come to?
This is a peek into the life of Simon Marks.
But on the other hand, there are obviously moments that are hugely important for all of us here in the UK as the relationship between the UK and the US faces, and I think it will face throughout 2026, a whole range of increasing challenges. I mean, we see today in the Mirror that poll that suggests that most people in the country now want, or more people in the country now want, the Prime Minister to stand up to Donald Trump. Listeners will know that I think that we are inevitably heading to a confrontation with the Trump administration. I mean, it's not my opinion. You can read it in black and white in the new national security strategy that the Trump administration just released before Christmas, making it absolutely clear that they believe that Europe is facing civilizational erasure and that the answer lies in what they describe as patriotic European parties. That's where they find grounds for optimism. And it is clear that by that phrase, patriotic European parties, in the context of the UK, they mean Reform UK. And they're actively going to work, I think, to advance Nigel Farage's electoral prospects. But there are some huge hurdles ahead for Donald Trump in the early part of 2026 that we will be covering. And the first one of them, I think, is going to be the Supreme Court ruling about his so-called reciprocal tariffs, which, of course, aren't reciprocal tariffs at all. But there is every possibility that within the next few weeks, the Supreme Court is going to strike them down and is going to say that those tariffs that don't just lie at the heart of his trade and economic policy, they lie at the heart of his national security policy, are unconstitutional because he used emergency laws to invoke them, bypassing Congress, one of many moments throughout the last 12 months where he's basically ridden roughshod over the notion that Congress should have any role in governing the United States. It's highly likely, highly possible that the Supreme Court is going to strike those tariffs down, which would send him back to the drawing board and would also raise more questions here over what happens next in terms of negotiations for a US-UK trade deal, which are clearly stuck in the mire. And we now know that the government is preparing to send the King, the Queen, Prince William, the Princess of Wales. They're all going to be heading to the United States in the first 6 months of the year in what I think you can argue is a further attempt to kind of throw raw meat at Donald Trump's lion in an effort to pacify him and hope that you can use the royal family to buy you another 6 months of time where you avoid what I think is an inevitable confrontation.
But what, I mean, how would that confrontation manifest itself? Are we going to have a sort of Hugh Grant Love Actually moment?
Well, I mean,
I can't imagine Keir Starmer doing that.
I think you have to ask, well, if it is Keir Starmer, right? I mean, I think you have to ask yourself, how much more can the UK simply soak up? I mean, we've soaked up a trade agreement that has come off the rails, and we seem to be struggling to put it back on the rails, despite the enormous amount of hullabaloo that existed when Peter Mandelson was standing in the Oval Office back in May, I think it was, and the Prime Minister was on speakerphone extolling the virtues of this kind of partial trade deal that they've done. We've soaked up a situation in which the President of the United States wants $10 billion in damages from this country's public broadcaster. And we certainly have no public evidence that suggests the Prime Minister has ever been on the phone with Donald Trump and said, you know what, we're sending the King over. You came over to Windsor for the second unprecedented, historic state visit to the UK. Honestly, do me a favour. The one, you know, there's a red line, there are various red lines for me, but one of them is suing Britain's public broadcaster for $10 billion when, frankly, they've got a much stronger case to sue you for defamation than you have to sue them. I mean, at what point do you actually stand up? Because there has to be one. It's really a question of what's the straw that breaks the camel's back. It hasn't happened in 2025. I think it might happen in 2026, especially with the focus that this administration in the United States is now placing on its claim that freedom of speech is being rolled back in the UK.
So that's one prediction. Any others?
I think we should talk about the Democrats. We don't talk enough about the Democrats. And that's partly, of course, because Donald Trump vacuums up every ounce of oxygen and energy in the room, and the Klieg lights are always on him, and he's a master at distraction. But the Democrats have got massive questions to answer in 2026. Who are they? Where have they gone? What are they going to do to try and wrest control from the Republicans in November? You know, this should be a banner year, 2026, in the United States. America's 250th birthday, the World Cup being hosted partly on American soil, and midterm elections in November the 3rd, 2026. And those midterm elections are vital to the future of the country because control of Congress is going to be on the ballot. And the Democrats can justifiably be accused of having abandoned the American people. And again, that's not me. That's Senator Cory Booker, a prominent Democrat from New Jersey, who has accused his own party of abandoning the American people multiple times over the course of this year. Now, they've got to find not only the way of getting back into the national conversation. And sure, there have been, you know, some prominent figures, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, who have found a way of cutting through. But they've got to find a way of getting back into the conversation consistently. But before they do that, they have to decide who they are. Are they the party of Zoran Mamdani, who's about to be inaugurated as the next mayor of New York City? Democratic socialist, definitely to the left of the party. He's excited the grassroots who think that that's the future for the Democratic Party. Or are they the party of a much lesser known figure, but arguably more important and certainly more powerful, the incoming senator in Virginia, Abigail Spanberger, a centrist Democrat who has literally said, verbally, actually said to the party, do not ever use the word socialist again when you're talking to the American people. Now, those two Democrats, both of whom triumphed in off-year elections this year, Spanberger in Virginia and Mamdani in New York, are complete polar opposites in terms of their beliefs for the future of the party, where they want it to go. And there has to be an internecine war that now takes place that decides which Democratic Party is putting itself out there in the midterms and then again in 2028. And I can't tell you the way that comes out, but I can tell you that that battle is going to be a vital thing for us to watch in the year ahead. And we also have to watch how the Democrats are going to find a way of explaining to the American people why they have abandoned the American people over the last year.
Absolutely fascinating, Simon. Look, American politics, whatever side of it you're on, or if you're on no side, it's always interesting. And you bring it to life for us on LBC, and thank you very much. And I'm actually coming to the States in April. I got given,
fantastic.
I got given a Christmas present when I'm going to New York.
Well, that's not far away.
I've been bought tickets to go and see Chess, the musical, which I have seen about a dozen times before.
Well, maybe I'll pop up
but
and see
it. It's a new production.
Lovely.
So, end of April, so I'm really looking forward to that.
That'll be fantastic.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. We're going to hear from Sheila Fogarty and Nick Abbott later in the hour, but we also want to get your New Year's resolutions or predictions. I'm going to be like James O'Brien. Brian in Mystery Hour. Whenever you call in, I'm going to say resolution or prediction. 0345 6060973. And I'll tell you what my predictions are as well. It's 16 minutes past 12.
This is LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights. And my mum hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost. Where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh, my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and a car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
18 minutes past 12. Sean in Cardiff says, I bloody love Simon Marks. What a communicator. Well, we all do. And you can love him for 3 hours this afternoon from 4 o'clock because he's standing in for Tom Swarbrick on Drive all this week. Lee says, he's 2026 and 2026 predictions just for fun, he says. I've had to edit one or two of these because they're slightly on the edge. But anyway, Trump resigns in disgrace. Bondi, Blanche and Patel, plus many others, face impeachment and charges. House investigations kick off on Trump and Witkoff. Badenoch, working for Neil Record. What's that? What does that mean? I don't understand that. Cleverly takes over the mess. Starmer commits to a customs union. No leadership challenge. Vance divorces Usha and gets engaged to Erica Kirk. Is sworn in and then panics. Ukraine holds the line with European cash. Gaza ceasefire falls apart. Middle East states abandon Israel and US plan. Netanyahu found guilty and resigns pre-election. 70% of US tariffs are gone as China plays it all effectively. Happy New Year, says Lee. One has to be optimistic. Well, he says Lee and Diego Garcia. Have you made that up, Lee? Are you being a little bit naughty there? Let's go to Eric in Liverpool. Eric.
Happy New Year, Ian.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay. I think one inevitable thing in my book for the prediction for 26 is that Donald Trump, now, there's certain things that are going to topple him, a big combination. One of them will be his ongoing dementia. Because if you look at his hands, I'm blind, but a lot of my friends have looked at his hands, you know, on YouTube and that. They zoom in. And they said that he's got holes in his hand, you know, like puncture marks. And there is an Alzheimer's drug that they put you on. And it can actually make your hands swell. It can affect your body in a bad way. So you've got the Alzheimer's, you've got his ill health, but you've also got these Jeffrey Epstein things that are hanging around his neck. And I really think a combination of those things will hit him.
Do you not think that is wishful thinking on your part, Eric?
No. I just think he's made that many enemies, possibly in the Republican Party even, that they're out to get him, to be honest. And you know, if there's things lying around, they will get hold of it by hook or by crook.
Well, I think during his first term in power, there were many people that wrote him off, thought that, he can't possibly survive, he's too erratic, he says stupid things, he's going to be impeached. And it never happened.
No.
And I must admit, he survived all of the Epstein revelations so far. They've just sort of brushed off him like Teflon. I'm not sure I agree with you on that.
Well, it's either that or it'll be his ill health, because he's definitely a very sick man. Because my late uncle had Alzheimer's, and if you look at Trump, listen to his when he's speaking to people, there's certainly signs of ongoing dementia. But I just feel that it's a second term now. Yeah. But, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's left. And I think there's going to be that many people, hanging about that won't like him. But at some point, something will come out. And if it's got anything to do with paedophilia or underage girls or anything like that, you know, I don't think, you know, shooting someone on Fifth Avenue and getting away with it's one thing. But doing that's another.
Well, I mean, on the being deposed, I mean, I don't think there's any way he could be impeached, certainly not before the November midterms, because there wouldn't be the support in Congress for it. Now, that may change after that. But even then, I mean, it's a very big thing to do, to depose a sitting president. It's only been done, well, the last time it was done, I suppose, was Richard Nixon, but he resigned. Well, he resigned, although you could say he was forced into resignation, but I'm not sure I can see that.
I think, his ill health, you know, I've got a feeling he won't be alive by the end of next year. You know, he seems a sick man to me. You know, it's a horrible thing to have to say, but truth be out, you know.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it is a horrible thing to say. You're absolutely right. But then again, if American journalists had done their job properly, we might have all known about Joe Biden's weaknesses and illnesses before we eventually did. I remember about 6 months before it was all revealed, I remember saying on air that I thought that he was suffering from dementia, and I felt awful about doing it because it's not nice to speculate about that. But given that we all knew that that really was what was going on with Joe Biden, but no one would say so, I can't honestly pull you up for suggesting it with Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, you know, I was blinded by a mugger in 81, and I wouldn't risk dementia on that person even. It's a horrible condition, you know. But I just feel that generally as well, the general public in America are getting very tired of high grocery prices and everything. And I listened to something on YouTube the other night about farmers even that were all for Trump even 6 months ago, and they're getting sick of him because they're saying that even the farmers, you know, with this soya business, they're getting badly affected. So if the red states are turning against him, and in one state, I can't remember offhand, but where was it now? I'm thinking it was, anyway, it was a definite red, you know, Trump state. And the person only lost to the Republican candidate, I think by, he got 17% more votes than the last time, the last Democrat that stood. And that's pretty good in a red hot state, you know, that's gone red. And I think little signs like that, you know, make me think
and
that.
Just finally, do you do New Year's resolutions?
Yes.
What's your New Year's resolution for this year?
I'm going to try and stay sane.
Well, listening to LBC should help you in that endeavour, shouldn't it?
And I'm going to look after my two cats as well, my two girls.
I would hope you wouldn't need a New Year's resolution to do that. That would be automatic. Eric, thank you very much indeed. John in Reading has clearly been on the source. He says, predictions. Number one, Ian Dale concedes that leaving the EU was not a good idea. Number two, James O'Brien states that Nigel Farage may have a point. Which of those two do you think? Which of those two do you think is most likely to happen during 2026? I would say the second one, frankly. But there we go. Wesley says, Ian, I feel extremely optimistic about 2026. We went to Prague for a few days, and I think our country is miles apart from our cuisine, palaces, people, and diversity. We need to appreciate our country more and not listen to politicians who spell doom and gloom so they can get into power. Our country is great. And I love it. Well, Wesley in Gravesend is a regular contributor, and I love contributions like that because I totally agree with Wesley that we have a tendency in this country to do our country down, to criticise it. And look, obviously there are things to criticise about our country. I'm not pretending that there are not. But I think we've got ourselves into almost a psychotic state of thinking that nothing is good about this country, nothing works, that London is the most terrible crime-ridden capital city. And it's not, there is crime in London, just as there is in any city around the world, but it's a fantastic place. It's one of the few world cities that there are in the world that actually qualify for being called that. So we should stop all this gloom and doom. And I think you're right. I mean, Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, I think, really are to blame for a lot of this, where they talk down our economy, and guess what? Our economy is not working very well at the moment. We're not in recession, so we can all be thankful for that. So what are your predictions, and what are your New Year's resolutions for 2026? 0345 6060 973. Well, let me tell you what my 10 predictions for 2026 are, and see whether you agree with some of them or some of them you think are completely fanciful. My first one is that Angela Rayner will return to the cabinet at some point during 2026. Now, that might be quite inconvenient for her because she's writing a book at the moment. And if she gets back into the cabinet, she won't be able to publish that book. So, but I think it is very likely. I think the cabinet misses her. I think the government misses her. And whatever you think of Angela Rayner in all sorts of different ways, she's a character. Politics needs characters. And she also knew how to pull the levers of government, which so many of our current cabinet ministers seem not to. I think they miss her partly because she was somebody that the whole country recognised, whether they liked her or not. She was somebody who had a real appeal to many parts of the country. And I think people saw her as a bit of a balance to Keir Starmer in many ways. They clearly had a bit of a fractious relationship at the beginning, but I think they got over that. And I think he really is missing her. Now, if she came back, I doubt whether she would be Deputy Prime Minister. She'd sort of have to work her way back in a way and probably have to settle for a lesser cabinet post. But I think a Labour cabinet with Angela Rayner is probably stronger than a Labour cabinet without her. So that's my first prediction. My second prediction is that Keir Starmer will still be Prime Minister at the end of the year. Now, you might be surprised by that. The reason I say that is because I think he will have a terrible time in the May elections. You look at the way Labour's polling at the moment, some polls down as low as 12%. In Wales, it's 10%. In Scotland, it's 10%. If he can survive the fallout from that, then I think he will be clear for the rest of the year. And Labour doesn't have a tradition of political regicide, unlike the Tories. And in the end, I suspect many Labour MPs will think, well, one lesson that we should learn from the Tories is changing your leader doesn't automatically lead to increased popularity. So that is my second prediction, that Keir Starmer will still be Prime Minister at the end of the year. My third one is that Sir Ed Davey is replaced as Lib Dem leader. Now, that is one that I have to say I'm less sure of. There is internal dissent within the Liberal Democrats, as I understand it, for people who think that he hasn't made any progress since the last election. But we have to remember, he did actually win 72 seats. Now, that was partly because of Reform UK standing in lots of Conservative seats, and they let the Lib Dems through the middle. But no one can take that achievement away from him. But I think a lot of Liberal Democrats feel that he just hasn't got the oomph that's needed to take them to the next stage. On the other hand, his biggest strength is there's no obvious replacement. So those are my first three predictions. I'll give you some of the others after the news. 0345 6060 973. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Nick Abbott, and we'll also be talking to Sheila Fogarty with some of her predictions for 2026. But we also want to hear from you with your predictions or New Year's resolutions. It's 12:30 on LBC. Let's get the latest news headlines from Tim Humphrey.
Most Eurostar services under the Channel have now resumed after a power outage caused major disruption. Hundreds of people were left stranded on Eurostar and the shuttle services overnight. A 22-year-old man's appeared in court charged with murdering a 15-year-old boy in North London. Adam Henry died from a single stab wound in Islington. Abdul Dedor, who appeared via a video link, spoke only to confirm his name and date of birth. The victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be honoured before Sydney's New Year fireworks shortly. 15 people died in a shooting there earlier this month. LBC weather, a cold afternoon, wintry showers in the north and a high of 8 degrees.
LBC. Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and beyond. To the beauty of Bali, the warmth of Thailand, and the wonders of Vietnam, or many other Asian destinations. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Thailand starting from £614. Book your escape today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
12:33 on LBC. We're talking about New Year's resolutions, New Year's predictions for 2026. I've just given you a few of my predictions. I'll give you a few more of those later on. Michael in Kilburn says, Ian Dale and Nick Abbott, what a mashup. Never been described as a mashup before. You would be the straight man, the Ernie to his Eric, if you like, if you were to team up as a duo. Looking forward to this hour so much, says Michael. Well, I have the man in question on the line. Nick Abbott joins me, of course, presenter of the A to Z of 2025 at 10 o'clock each night this week. Nick, welcome.
Is this Ian Dale?
As if you didn't know.
The Ian Dale.
The Ian Dale. You have the honour of being on my programme.
Thank you for taking my call, Ian. I love your show.
Are you a first-time caller, Nick?
Yeah, I am a first-time caller, yeah.
And I can tell you're incredibly nervous.
I am. I'm shaking.
I think this is the first time that you and I have actually been on the radio together, despite me being here for 15 years.
We're breaking our virginity together live on the radio. It's a delight.
Misses. Now, you don't really get a chance to celebrate New Year in the conventional way because you're on the radio, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. I celebrate the New Year by tiptoeing gingerly out of the building and joining the the heaving throng outside and playing vomit hopscotch.
Oh, yeah, I don't envy you that one. So, do you have any... Let's start with predictions. Do you have predictions for 2026?
Yes, I do. Thank you for asking. I've got three. I've got... one is Donald Trump will not become nicer. As the midterm elections loom and there's the possibility that he'll lose complete control, I don't think he's going to become a nicer person. I think that ship sailed and sunk. That is unless the Republicans have fixed any and all forthcoming elections before a single vote has been cast, which I suspect they might have done.
Well, you could say that's happening in this country, where the government's going to allow councils to abolish local elections this year because they're not ready for the mayoral elections. I mean, that seems to me to be the perfect definition of gerrymandering.
Oh, typical Starmer. I've got another. Artificial intelligence is going to be used to fire a huge number of people who previously thought they'd be impervious to automation, like lawyers, accountants, the writers of books on politics.
Radio
Which means
presenters.
That we will all have to rely on the kindness of billionaire tech bro strangers who are not noted for their generosity to others. And as Ozempic takes the place of breakfast, lunch and dinner, we'll all become so thin that we'll be invisible when we turn sideways.
Well, you don't have a weight problem, do you?
No.
Unlike me.
Well, I have faith in you, Ian. I believe in you.
You sound like Agnetha from ABBA. I still have faith in you.
Oh, no, 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 don't sing.
All right, I'll try. Sorry, I do apologise to everybody. The whole weight loss thing, though, it's become such an industry, isn't it? Apparently, there's a black market for these things now. You think, why would anyone buy Mounjaro or Ozempic or Wegovy on a black market without actually really knowing what was in the pen?
It sounds like you've been investigated this thoroughly.
Well, no, because I am on the Mounjaro, and I get it from the NHS, so I don't worry about what's in it. But I think people must be deranged if they go down that road.
Well, deranged is a strong word. You may think that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Do you do New Year's resolutions?
No, absolutely not. What's the point? January is the worst month of the year. It's cold, and it's dark, and it's miserable, and it's wet. Why load more misery onto yourself by depriving yourself of things that you really want to do and eat and have and be and fondle and stroke?
Well, that took a turn.
Now, have you not heard my show?
I have. Now, listen, right. The A to Z that you do every year, give us a couple of highlights from this year.
I'll give you one. My favourite word that has been given to me this year is nano banana. It's something to do with computers. I don't really know, but it does give you the opportunity to say nano banana, which is enormously satisfying. Try it.
Nano banana.
See?
I got a tremendous degree of satisfaction there.
Yeah, it makes you feel squidgy inside.
I felt a stirring.
Oh no!
Now I've got three texts in a row here. One says, yeah. "Nick sounds very different on the phone." Aaron says, "Why is Nick trying to sound posh? Sounds nothing like he does in the evenings."
Huh.
And Tess in Acton says, Nick doesn't sound like Nick. What are you doing with your voice, Nick?
Well, the thing is, I'm not being processed through £1 million worth of expensive machinery. I'm just using my old phone. That's the difference.
See, I was hoping we'd have you on the video link.
No way. No, I don't do videos. I don't do photographs. I'm like an American native. I don't do photographs. They take my soul, Ian.
And somebody else texted in earlier saying that, Ian, one of your resolutions should be to get Nick Abbott on your All Talk podcast. And I should say, we've asked you, Nick, but you don't like talking about yourself, do you?
No.
Which is very unusual in a radio presenter.
It is, yeah. No, but I only ever speak when I'm on the radio. Catch me off the radio and you'll find me completely silent.
Well, that wouldn't make for a good podcast, would it?
No.
So, tonight, 10 o'clock, which letters are you doing tonight?
It's the very, very difficult one. Some idiot put all the difficult letters right at the end of the alphabet, so it's V, W, X, Y, and Z in the A to Z of 2025. And as soon as that is finished, then it will go in a book along with all of my thoughts of the year, which will be on Kindle. And I've decided to call it, Thank You for Your Attention to This Matter. Unless Donald Trump has copyrighted that and decides to sue me for $10 billion. But that's what it's going to be called. It'll be coming out at the beginning of next year in ebook form for eco-lefty woke hippies and paperback for people who hate trees.
Marvellous. Now, Lucy has a request. She says, please get Nick to say Christmas one last time.
Well, tell Lucy it's not a request, Joe.
It could be, though. Wouldn't that be good? If you and I could present a joint music show, we'd have a ball.
Let me think about that for a moment. No.
We could have Mango Groove, we can have ABBA, we can have Cliff, we can have Meatloaf, we can have Roxette. What's not to like?
Oh, well, all of the above.
Nick, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for gracing our airwaves this morning. And you can hear Nick Abbott, of course, live on your radio set from 10 o'clock tonight here on LBC. So we're talking about predictions, our New Year's resolutions. Lance is in Bristol. Hello, Lance.
Hello. We've spoken before. Nice to speak to you. Happy New Year.
And you.
Now, I have three predictions for politics and a personal one. So if I could start with the political ones, I think Trump will attempt to be a third president but fail. I think Netanyahu will be forced to resign. And I think the European Union will have to free up all the money that's held from Russia so that it can sustain Ukraine for another couple of years. So those are my three political ones. And personally, I predict I will publish my first three books, starting with my memoir.
First three books in a single year?
Yes.
Is there the demand for that, Lawrence?
Well, I'm going to self-publish, and the reason being it's so difficult to get into a full proper publisher, and the memoir is very time dependent. I'm a semi-retired cardiologist, and my book is called Ungagged, The Sons of Bevan. Bevan being of an Iron Bevan, who obviously initiated the health service, and the sons relates to the Sons of Anarchy, because my book tells you the story from my boyhood becoming wanting to be a doctor, right through my development school, medical school, being junior doctor, all the things I observed, right up to consultant, and finally on my second consultant job, raising concerns after the Bristol baby scandal, where Steve Bolson was sent to Australia because he couldn't work in England, and I raised concerns and was sacked. So my book takes you through all of that, and I've got a GoFundMe page to raise money so I can afford to pay for the self-publication to a hybrid publisher. The other two books, one is about touch rugby, which I've found a lifesaver taking it up when I've been working around the country the last 20-odd years as a locum. And every week I would be going to the local social touch rugby club to keep my sanity. And the last one is my short little article, a short book, which is going to come out to do with my time in lockdown when I was working in the southeast before the time of vaccinations, and I caught COVID myself. So I was isolated in a lovely property I was renting for a couple of weeks, and it became a fun sort of session where the cardiologists had a sort of a WhatsApp group, and I started posting what I was cooking each night as a picture, no instructions, and it went to the WhatsApp group each week, each day rather, and it ended up with one of them saying a few other things about what I did in lockdown, you know, to keep myself sane. You should write it up. So a year later, I decided to write it up. And I've got the book ready. It's been lambasted by my daughter, who's on Instagram, when she's picked out some of the awful pictures of the food, which always tasted nice, but sometimes didn't look brilliant. But that's what I've got. All three are going to come out self-published in the next year.
Well, as a former publisher, can I issue a word of caution on the first one, that just make sure you have a lawyer read it for libel?
I have had a very detailed lawyer read by a company that also did it to Steve Bolson, so Keystone Law. I spent quite a bit of money to get that. So every word and every sentence and every omission or inclusion has been read.
Well, you and I have something in common, because I've got my autobiography coming out in July, and it's called Have I Said Too Much? Which I think the answer is probably yes, judging by the reaction from my sisters when I read bits out to them. Which
sure, sure. Well, I hope some of my predictions come right in politics.
We will see. Lance, thank you very much indeed, and Happy New Year. So, more of your calls on your New Year's predictions and resolutions, plus Sheila Fogarty. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
How do you feel about new council houses specifically for asylum seekers? Will the WI split apart over its exclusion of trans women? And did your weight loss jab leave you undernourished?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulgutthealth.com/radio.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
1247, Michael says, not a prediction necessarily, but something to watch. Japanese national debt now sits at 250%. The new Prime Minister, Sunae help me out, Sheila.
How do you spell it, babe?
Takaichi. I think that's right.
That sounds about right.
Wants to inject a lot of money into the Japanese economy to encourage growth, and she's borrowing further to do so, whilst the central bank attempts to put up interest rates to curb inflation. This could result in a Japanese debt crisis in 2026, which could have major repercussions all around the world. Happy New Year, says Michael in Rains Park. Happy New Year to you, Michael. Sheila Fogarty joins me, because she's on from 1 o'clock, but we're giving a bit of extra time.
Come in especially early for you.
Well, Thank you so much.
Brain cranking up.
Because we've had Simon Marks and Nick Abbott giving their New Year's predictions. What are yours?
Well, I'm focusing initially in our conversation on the Middle East, which is always of interest, obviously, but has been much more so for pretty obvious reasons in the last few years. But on Iran in particular, I know you talked about Iran in your first hour, but I noticed in your opening statement or your opening comments about it, you didn't particularly mention Iranian women. That may have changed as the hour progressed.
Well, that was the 2022 protest, wasn't it? I mean,
They are still happening, though, online and off. Yeah,
okay.
And I think it's not the only issue that Iranians are facing. Obviously, you and your callers outlined them all in that hour of the economy, political freedom, lack of it, the oppression that's there. Clearly, it's a totalitarian state. But I think with Iran, there's a key difference at the moment. I don't think you can write them off and decide that it's going to be easy for that regime to fall, because I don't think it is at all, because of the grip they've got.
Well, if it was, it would have done by now.
They would have done by now. The grip they've got from within, internally. But they have been massively strategically weakened by Israel, by that conflict with Israel, the attacks on them by Israel. That's shifted Israel's position in the Middle East as well, I would argue. But certainly on Iran, it has massively weakened them. The people of Iran are getting more and more vocal, have been for some years now. And I wonder how easy or not it is for us to really see just how weakened that regime has become because of that attack by Israel and America. And let's not forget the recent comments, I think it was even yesterday or the day before, from President Trump saying he'd join Israel again if needs be. So the strong sort of breathing down the neck of Iran going on here. So I think Iran is definitely one to watch in 2026. And that will have if it does fall, the regime, that will have implications that go far and wide.
I think the interesting thing this time is that there is economic pressure. Inflation is rampant.
Yeah.
There's a terrible drought in many parts of
Sanctions
Iran.
Sanctions work.
Well, possibly. I don't think the screw has been turned as much as it could be on Iran.
Mm.
But when you've got economic pressures, that really ramps it up, because people will always want to protest against political either instability or repression. But I think that adds to
it. Absolutely, it does. If it's, I mean, in a very different way, we're seeing that here. You know, people need to survive. Mm. And the first job of any government is to at least set the backdrop for people to survive. You know, even if you put oppression to one side. So that would be my first one.
Okay. I'll throw in another one of mine. West Ham escape relegation, which is more hope than expectation. But
do you know, I keep up with Premier League football much less than I used to.
You came to West Ham with me once, didn't you?
I did. Remember Shouty Man?
Yeah.
There was a man behind us who just screamed blue murder and vile blue murder throughout the entire match. And I remember saying to you at the end, do you think he just goes home to his wife and goes back into normality and then says, what's for dinner, love? And you think
and
he
then
does.
Goes back to his normal job in banking.
But he was a vile racist, I remember.
Oh, I don't remember him being racist.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah, he was awful.
Did I not confront him?
No, you didn't. But that's okay. He was a good, you know, he wouldn't have been easy to confront. You couldn't miss him vocally. I mean, he was so loud. But he never stopped. He never stopped. And at one point, some bloke said to him, he can't hear you. He was shouting at a player. And he went, he can't hear you. I was thinking something to shut him up. He was driving
me
crazy.
I do remember once when we're sitting in those same seats back in the old days in the East Stand at Upton Park. And there was a guy sitting in front of me who started uttering some racist
abuse.
And
you did wade in.
And I just stood up. And of course, because he was sitting on the seat below me, I was like 7 feet tall to him, and I just tapped him on the shoulder and just said, enough.
And did he stop?
And he looked up at me and he stopped.
Do you think fans do that more and more these days?
I think so. I think it is now seen as totally unacceptable to do anything like that. And I can't remember the last time I heard it.
And if we are talking about football, are you going to make me? I spoke about it for an hour yesterday. Is Arne Slot going to survive as Liverpool manager?
Yes, I think he will.
Hope so.
I mean, I think he's trying to make Liverpool play in a way that's completely alien to them. I think that's a little bit odd when you've just won the league and then you try and change the way the team plays. Mm. But I think that's at the basis of Mo Salah's dispute. Anyway, your next one.
Well, still in the Middle East, I don't think Hamas will yield to this new government, this new technocratic government that Trump is trying to instigate in Gaza, unless they are made to do so. And what making them do so looks like is anybody's guess. But I can't see Hamas, still currently armed, laying down its arms easily and getting in behind a technocratic government made up of various nations like Indonesia, for example. We'll see. I hope I'm proved wrong, but I have no reason to believe that they will at the moment. And I don't think there's much appetite internationally to wade in and make them. So we'll see whether I'm completely wrong about that and whether that appetite emerges. Domestically, should we talk about domestic politics? I think Starmer goes.
Do you?
I do.
I think it's possible, but I don't think it's probable.
Really?
Because the Labour Party don't really know how to do these things. I mean, the Tories are experts at killing off their leaders. But I think a lot of Labour people think, well, that may be so, but have they actually benefited from it? And it's arguable that in every case where they've done it, they've ended up with something worse, apart from possibly Liz Truss.
I suppose it depends on what happens in May. It depends on whether there are more massive missteps. It depends on the turnaround in the economy, which I think will come. We'll start to see, surely, more improvement on the economy. The governor of the Bank of England, I heard being interviewed just before Christmas, and he was saying he expects there to be a better position on inflation, for example. Again, that's not something particularly because of Keir Starmer, but if they don't do as badly in May as people expect, and if the economy starts to strengthen, maybe Labour colleagues who might be on manoeuvres will pull back. You might be right, but it was interesting when I was up with the Fogarty clan at Christmas.
Liverpool.
A whole range of political views there. We're not one solid block on politics at all. Obviously, intergenerationally, there are differences as well. But to a man and woman, there was disillusionment about Labour and particularly about Starmer. And, you know, they come from all kinds of positions.
He is the most unpopular Prime Minister since records began at this stage in the Parliament. Mm. And I'm not sure there's any way back from that. I'm really not. Ian Duncan Smith said once, and he should know, that as a political leader, you have 90 days and people have made up their minds about you after 90 days. Well, Keir Starmer's had 17 months and I think people have made up their minds about him.
I remember thinking how thinking that people were making up their minds too hastily at the beginning when we talked about it a lot on air. I thought, God, give the guy a chance. You know, the country's in a mess. He's inherited a mess. Give the guy a chance. And then as time went on, I'm increasingly frustrated myself. And I think the latest example of this, and yes, he's been given partial information, so there's more to learn about the Egyptian activist Al-Fatah and that saga. But I don't think that's going to continue to bite him, I think.
Well, I've got a domestic one.
Go on.
Jeremy Corbyn resigns from your party.
Okay. To do what?
I just think because he's fed up with Zara Sultana. I just don't see...
So it'll be her party?
It could well be. But, of course, they don't have a leader. They've got
they were always going to have a co-leader,
they've got this collective leadership, which I think is absolutely star-raving bonkers.
So
but then
I.
Most of their policies are.
He'll resign from it.
Well, it's a possibility, isn't it? I'd say that's a possibility rather than a probability. Yeah. Your next one?
Well, before we leave the Starmer thing, I think the boats, again, spoke about the boats yesterday, the channel crossings. If there is, and God, it's a big if, but if there is a signal improvement in that, Wes Streeting is going to have a job on his hands beating Shabana Mahmood to the leadership if there is a leadership bid.
Yes, I think he's got a job on his hands anyway. I think he is the best candidate, but he's got a majority in his constituency of 500, and I think a lot of Labour MPs who are potentially quite friendly towards him will see that as a big block. So,
the Royals are going to be interesting, aren't they? Because, or the tone around the Royals, I think, will be interesting, because this year was, in many ways, a nightmare for them, wasn't it, in terms of public opinion, because of the Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor farrago, is that the word? But I wonder how much of that will hang over them. I wonder whether the questions about transparency, you know, the Cabinet Office papers yesterday, questions about transparency, questions about money, sympathy for both the King and the Princess of Wales will, I think, continue because of their respective illnesses and hopefully recovery fully from that. So we'll see what a year it will be for the Royals.
Another one, England to reach the World Cup final. Notice I don't say England to win the World Cup final.
Hooray to that, I hope so.
But, Sheila Fogarty,
what,
given your Irish heritage, if the Republic of Ireland make it to the finals and they play England, who do you support?
Republic of Ireland go to the finals of the World Cup and play England, I'd have to just put my head under a pillow and not watch.
That's very diplomatic.
When I was growing up, actually, if there was ever a point where England and Ireland were playing each other, whether it was football or anything else, or competing in the Olympics, for example, that happened to GB and Ireland, there was often a sort of very good-humoured sparring match between my dad in particular and the rest of us. He'd be like, you know, he'd take on the Irish banner and we'd be attacking him and jumping on him and God
knows what
else.
Families are
all
about.
That's what families are for, yeah.
Sheila, thank you
Nobody
so much.
Nobody was harmed in the making of that.
Now, I'm going to give the final word to Sam, who says, dear Ian, I've had a very difficult year and a very lonely year. Every weekday evening, you've kept me company with your calm voice. It's felt like a friend being there and just having something to listen to and feel engaged in. Thank you again, Ian. Wish you and all the presenters at LBC and all the listeners a very happy new year. Well,
that's lovely.
Is what radio is all about, isn't it?
It is, and I think we forget, it's easy to forget when we do this job, how much it is company for people, and that came through loud and clear during the pandemic, and at this time of year, for sure, yeah. And when people are grieving, and that's come through quite a lot for me over the last few years, when people are grieving, they find regular, familiar voices on the radio very comforting.
Well, unless you want me with you for the next 3 hours, I'm gonna go home.
It's up to you. It's up to you, babe.
Well, I will be back tomorrow morning from 10 on New Year's Day. Happy New Year to everyone who's listening. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Simon Marks, in for Tom Swarbrick. But right now, here is Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much indeed. Have a great afternoon. And a Happy New Year to you, Ian, as well. At 3 today, M&S are selling extra nutrient-rich food for people on weight loss jabs who typically eat much less than before when they're on the jabs. What did it do to your eating? At 2, the WI decided some weeks ago, didn't they, reluctantly, to exclude trans women in response to the Supreme Court ruling on what sex means in gender equality law. It means biological sex, according to the Supreme Court. Will this split the WI apart? A schism. At this time of year, we often talk about schisms in churches. Not in the WI, but it's looking possible. But I'll start with the question of council houses specifically built for asylum seekers. How do you feel about that?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and... Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, an extra train is running between London and Paris to try to relieve some of the backlog of yesterday's Eurostar and Le Shuttle cancellations. A power surge caused disruption with some passengers left stranded overnight. Services have resumed, but there are still some delays and restrictions. Sean Tipton from the Association of British Travel Agents says those who experience delays should get some money back.
You are then due some compensation, up to 3/4 of the cost of your ticket, if you accept an e-voucher. So that should be some consolation for those poor people who are stuck on trains, in some cases for a number of hours.
Iran's government says it will listen patiently to protesters as demonstrations spread outside of the capital. People are protesting over the country's plummeting currency and inflationary pressures, which have pushed up the price of food and essentials. A new central bank governor has been appointed. Officials in Odessa say Russian drones have hit apartment buildings and the power grid in an overnight attack that injured 6 people, including a toddler and 2 other children. Ukrainian President Zelensky is due to hold talks next week with the heads of European governments over proposals for a peace plan. The number of patients in hospital with flu is levelling off, according to new NHS figures, but officials have warned the service is not out of danger yet, with temperatures due to fall. NHS England says there are signs the service is in calmer waters after flu cases steadied following an early rise in hospital admissions. Meanwhile, a new fleet of 500 ambulances is being rolled out across the UK at a cost of more than £75 million. Jason Killens is chief executive of the London Ambulance Service.
Our vehicles are on the road 24 hours a day. They're responding, braking and accelerating quickly. So there's lots of wear and tear on the vehicle. So a new modern fleet is essential for us to be able to provide quick and timely responses to patients.
Snowfall is expected across much of the UK in a chilly start to the new year. The Met Office has issued a yellow warning for snow and ice across large parts of England and Wales between midnight and noon on January the 2nd. An amber cold health alert from tonight until Tuesday has been expanded to all parts of England. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed early for New Year's Eve, down 9 points at 99.31. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cold afternoon, wintry showers in the north and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We know, don't we, that housing is a massive issue, whether it's social housing, into which the government has committed a great deal of money, £27 billion, £29 billion, a great deal of money, and they still stand by their commitment on the numbers of houses they say they can build in this parliament. I have my doubts about the feasibility of that, but we'll see. And that's just housing generally, but social housing they've committed to, but we know that housing generally, the availability of stock generally is a problem in our country. So I wonder what you make of this plan to house asylum seekers in newly built council houses as part of a push to end the use of asylum hotels and private landlords. And I guess before we immediately go, well, hang on, specifically building them for asylum seekers, we know that many pre-existing citizens of this country, long-standing permanent citizens of this country, have little to no access to decent housing. Politically, I think there's a problem here, isn't there? Having said that, the use of asylum hotels and private landlords to house what are human beings, asylum seekers, is extortionately expensive. For a number of different reasons, not least private landlords in some cases cashing in on the urgent need, hotels cashing in sometimes on the urgent need as well. It is a bill that certainly looks and feels out of control, government saying it's bringing it under control and will end the use of hotels for asylum seekers. But if this is one of the ways in which they're going to do it, and around 200 local authorities have indicated interest in this pilot scheme that would fund the building of new properties or, as well, the refurbishment of derelict housing to make room for asylum seekers, I wonder how you would feel about that. Tell me on 0345 6060 973. People have to go somewhere, but in many cases that includes you too. You have to go somewhere. 84850, the number to text. By go, I mean live somewhere. Let's talk about this with Councillor George Madgwick, leader of Reform UK in Portsmouth. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila. I hope you're well.
I'm fine, thank you. Yes, and a happy new year to you when it comes at midnight anyway.
When it comes, yeah.
When it comes. What do you make of this scheme?
I think it's disgusting. I mean, look, at the end of the day, and I understand your preamble in relation to, you know, people have got to live somewhere, and I completely agree. And as we always know, that there'll always be some genuine people amongst that collection of people that do come over via the boats. However, I've said this, especially being in Portsmouth, we've had a lot of issues with this in Portsmouth. We've got more people that ride through on boats living in Portsmouth than any other authority in Hampshire combined. So I'm on the grounds. We know how serious this problem is. And only this summer, they started evicting people from their homes to make way for government migrant contracts. And we've now got a lot of properties in Portsmouth that are being lived in by migrants that have come along boats.
Which kind of homes are you talking about when you say people are being evicted?
We're talking family homes, houses of multiple occupancy, things like that. They've taken over those on a private level using a third party contractor, and there is proactively, I think it's just over 70 now, to be precise.
But are you saying that councils and essentially the government as well are making people who already live in places homeless in order to place asylum seekers in them?
I'm not saying the council are, no. I'm saying that the Home Office are indirectly, yes. So what's happening, and this has been well reported as well, by the way, what's happened is, as we found out over the summer, is that there were originally 53 properties that were in Portsmouth that we were never notified about as a council, that were being used to house people that had left the hotels and obviously been dispersed into external accommodation. We then discovered that there was a multiple number of properties where there were local people, just like you and me, living in the properties, who were then given eviction notices by their landlords, because their landlords were offered a contract from a third-party contractor from the Home Office. That's factual. That's happened.
Yeah.
And these people were evicted, essentially made homeless. In one instance, actually, there was a lady and her children that actually ended up being housed in a hotel, which is ironic. Very sad situation. So it's unacceptable. It's
completely. Can I ask you what you know about the costs of those contracts? Because I know of certain cases where, both here and in Ireland, who are facing the same issues, where what used to be hotels or holiday accommodation, that kind of thing, has been the same kind of thing has happened. Not necessarily emptied out, but used and contracts created, and very, very pricey contracts. Yeah. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, incredibly pricey contracts. So, and this is where the problem is. And this is one landlord I spoke to, obviously I won't name him. One landlord I spoke to said, how can you blame me? They're offering me a 5-year fixed term agreement where they do all the repairs for me, and the rental is dramatically higher than what they're getting from the private sector. So how can you blame landlords that are in business if they're looking for a business element, you know? And this is what they're doing. So yeah, the costs are extortionate. I know one example where it was about 40% higher than what they were currently getting in the private sector. So, you know, there is an incentive for them to do so. And as I say, from a landlord perspective, it's a 5-year guaranteed contract. It comes with all maintenance, all repairs done for them. You know, it's a sensible business decision. In my opinion, it's not a moral decision. I don't think it's morally correct.
At the very least, it's a tough decision, isn't it? I would hope I would make the opposite decision and leave people in the homes that they were in. But it's a tough decision because...
It's especially in the current economic climate as well. You've got to remember, interest rates have soared since back in the early 2000s. Mm. And, you know, the bills are now a lot higher.
Landlords have lost many of their perks, haven't they? Tax
yes,
perks.
Yes,